So he used to read Srimad Bhagavatam every day in breaks from, say, between 5 in the morning, say about 7:30, 8 o'clock. At that time the temples are open and everything is going on very well in the temple. Devotees will receive prasadam from the temple counters. And so there was no need for Parameshwar to help them. And times like that, between 12 and 4 in the afternoon, also there is a break. He used to sit and read Srimad Bhagavatam. And those who have seen Parameshwar, they say that when he came to this temple, he looked about 40 to 45 years old. That is how much old he was. He looked like when he came to this temple. And after they who saw him for 25 to 30 years, eventually when he gave up his body at the time when he was 80 years old, Parameshwar looked exactly the same person who came to the temple when he was 45 years old. So in this long period of time he spent there, approximately 35 years of time, Parameshwar read Srimad Bhagavatam not 1,000 times. He read Srimad Bhagavatam 1,200 times. That is how many times he read Srimad Bhagavatam. That was his desire to read Srimad Bhagavatam. That he read Srimad Bhagavatam 1,200 times. So in other words, you can imagine what a amount of commitment what that Parameshwar had to Srimad Bhagavatam. And on the last 1,200th time, when he read Srimad Bhagavatam, and when he completed the 12th canto, and also the 13th chapter, the last chapter, Parameshwar paid his obeisances to Krishna and said to him, Srimad Bhagavate Mahapurane Paramahamsa Samhitayam Dvadasha Skande Trayodashodhyaya, paid his obeisances and handed over Srimad Bhagavatam to Krishna and he left this world. This is how that devotee left this world. That Srimad Bhagavatam, he left it in front of Krishna, is still maintained by the temple authorities as a souvenir of that great devotee's memory. They kept that Srimad Bhagavatam. And that was the last day of that devotee's life. And in this large time of 35 years in the temple he spent, he read Srimad Bhagavatam 1,200 times. And that reading Srimad Bhagavatam was the secret of Parameshwar not getting one day sick in these 35 years. These 35 years of time in the temple, he spent so nicely. There was not one day when he has not given prasadam to the devotees. There was not even one day when he has not read Srimad Bhagavatam. There was not one day when he has not saw the deity all the 5 times of the different offerings to the deity. So this is commitment. This is spiritual life. That is Krishna consciousness. That when one understands Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna himself, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the vehicle, or to understand Krishna, Krishna is Bhagavata Swarupi. That's why Srimad Bhagavadakhyoyam Pratyaksha Krishna Mevahi. So Pratyaksha Krishna, if you want to see Krishna, they can see him in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the ample proof to show that if you want to search for Krishna, search for him through Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the word from these great personalities. That's what they are telling us. That again and again, repeatedly, Bhagavatam is presenting this point to us that see us through Srimad Bhagavatam. So I'll just read that chapter and then we can look at any questions or comments. 17 chapters. So I'll continue from the 18th chapter. Shri Maitreya Vacham Tadeva Mahagarni Janesha Bhashidam Mahamanas Vidganaya Dhurmadaha Hadir Viditva Gadimangana Radandrasadam Nirvimeshe Taranidaha Dadarsha Datra Vijidam Dharadharam Praniyamana Vimadgradam Shraya Mushnandam Ashna Swarijo Runashriya Jahasa Chaho Vanagojaro Mrigaha Ahaina Mehyatnyamahim Vimunjano Rasaugasam Vishwasrajayam Arpida Na Swasti Yasya Sanayam Amekshada Suradham Asadida Sudara Kradeem Tum Masabat Meira Bhavaya Kimbhado Yo Mayaya Handi Suran Paroshadil Tvam Yoga Maya Balamal Pabavrusham Samstapya Mooda Pramurje Suhul Chruja Toi samsthide gadaya shirna shesha nyasmal bujachidaya ye jagubhyam ബലിം ഹരന്ദ്രശയോ ഏച ദേവ സ്വയം സർവേ ന ഭവിഷ്യന്തി മൂലാഹ സദുദ്യമാനോ ദിരുരുത്തതോമരേ ദംഷ്ട്രാഗ്രഹം ഗാമുപലക്ഷ്യ ഭീതാം തോദം മൃഷന്നിരകാംബുദാംബുമധ്യാൽ ഗ്രാഹാഹത സകലേണൂർഹ്യദേവാം തം നിസ്സരന്തം സൈലാദനുദ്രുതോ ഹിരണ്യകേശോ ദുരതം യഥാ ചശ കരാളദംഷ്ട്രേശ കരാളദംഷ്ട്രോശനി നിസ്വനോ ബ്രവിൽ ഗതഹ്രിയാം കിന്തു സദാം വിഗർഹിതം സ ഗാമുദസ്താ സലിലസ്യ ഗോചരി വിന്യസ്യതസ്യാമധാൽസ്വസത്വം അഭിഷ്ടുതോ വിശ്വസ്രജാ പ്രസൂനൈ ആപൂര്യമാണോ വിഭുതൈ പശ്യതോയേ പരാം ശക്തം ദമനീയവകൽപം മഹാഗതം കാഞ്ചന ചിത്രദംശം മർമാന്യഭീഷ്ണം പ്രതുനന്ദം ദുരുക്തൈ പ്രചണ്ഡമന്യോ പ്രഹസംസ്തം ബഭാഷേ ശ്രീഭഗവാനുവാച സത്യം വയം ഭൂവന ഗോചരോ മൃഗ യുഷ്മദ്യുതാൻമൃഗേ ഗ്രാമസിംഹാൻ മൃത്യുഭാഷൈ പ്രതിമുക്തസ്യ വീര വികഥനം വൽഗ്രഹണം ജപദ്ര ഏവേ വയം ന്യാസഹരാരസൗകസാം ഗതഹൃയോ ഗതയാ ദ്രാവിദാസ്തേ തിഷ്ടാമഹേധാവി കഥഞ്ചിതാജോ സ്തേയം ക്വയാമോ ബലിനോൽപാദ്യ വൈരം ത്വം ഭദ്രധാനാം കില യൂഥവാദിവോ ഘടസ്വനോസ്വസ്വയമാശ്വനൂഹ സംസ്ഥാപയാസ്മാൻ പ്രമുജാശു സ്വഗാനം യസ്വാം പ്രതിജ്ഞാം നാദിവിവർത്യ സഭ്യാഃ മൈത്രേയ വാചാം സ്വദീക്ഷിപ്തോ ഭഗവതാ പ്രലബ്ധശ്ചരുഷാവൃഷം ആചാഹരോൽഭണം ക്രോധം ക്രീഡ്യമാനോ ഹിരാടിവാം സ്വംഗമർഷിതശ്വാസാൻ മന്യപ്രചരിതേന്ദ്രിയ ആസാദ്യതരസാ ദൈത്യോ ഗതയാഭ്യഹനധരീം ഭഗവാൻ സുഗതാവേഗം വിസൃഷ്ടം രുപണോ രസി അവയഞ്ജത്തിരശ്ചീനോ യോഗാരൂഢം യുവാന്തകം പുനർഗതാം സ്വമാദായ ഭ്രാമയന്തമഭീഷ്മശ അഭ്യർത്ഥാവരി ക്രുദ്ധ സംരഭാദഷ്ടദശതം തതശ്ച ഗതയാരാദ്യം ദക്ഷിണസ്യാം ബ്രൂയി ഭ്രവുഭ്രുഭൂ ആജഗ്നേതു സദുതാം ഗൗമ്യ ഗതയാം കോവിദോഹനൽ ഏവം ഗതാഭ്യം ഗുർവീഭ്യം ഹരിയക്ഷോ ഹരിരേവജാം ജിഗീഷയാ സുസംരാബ്ധം അന്യോന്യം അഭിജഗ്നധൂം തയോസ്പൃതോസ്തിന്മഗതാ ഗതാംഹദാംഗയോ ക്ഷതാസ്രവഘ്രാണവിവർദ്ധമന്യോ വിചിത്രമാർഗം ശരദോർജിഗീഷയ വിഭാതിലായാമിവ ശുഷ്മിനോർമൃധാഃ ദൈത്യസേജ്ഞാവയവസ്യമായാം ഗൃഹീതവാരാധനോ മഹാത്മന കൗരഭ്യമഹ്യാം ദിഷദോർവിമർദ്ദനം വിദൃഷുരാഗൃഷുവേമൃതസ്വരാൾ ആസന്നശൗണ്ടീരമവേദസാധ്വസം കൃതപ്രതീകാരമഹാരിവിക്രമം വിലക്ഷദൈത്യം ഭഗവാൻ സഹസ്രണീ ജഗാദ നാരായണമാദിസൂകരം ശ്രീഭ്രമോവാച ഏഷ തേ ദേവദേവാനാം അംഘങ്കുനോപേയുഷാം വിപ്രാണാം സൗരഭേയീണാം ഭൂതാനാമപ്യനാഗസാം അന്വേഷണ പ്രതിരഥോ ലോകാനടതി കണ്ടകം മൈനം മായാവിനം വൃത്തം നിരങ്കുശമസത്തമം ആ ക്രീഡവാലവദ്ദേവ യഥാശീവിഷമുത്തിനം യാവദേശവർദ്ധേത സ്വാം വേരാപ്രാപ്യതാരുണ സ്വാം ദേവമായമാസ്തായ താവജക്ഷിണമച്യുതാം ഏഷ ഘോരതമാസന്ധ്യ ലോകച്ഛംബൽക്കരീ പ്രഭോ ഉപസർവതി സർവാത്മൻ സുരാണാം ജയമാവഹാം അധുനേ ശോഭിജിന്നാമായോഗോ മൗഹൃത്തികോ ഗഹകാൽ ശിവായ നസ്വം സുഹൃദാമാശു നിസ്തരദുസ്തരം ദൃഷ്ട്വാ ത്വാമിഹിതം മൃത്യുമയമാസാദിത സ്വയം വിക്രമേനം മൃതേ ഹത്വാ ലോകാനാദേഹി ശർമണി ഇതി ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാപുരാണേ തൃതീയസ്കന്ധേ അഷ്ടാദശോധ്യായ ശ്രീ മൈത്രേയോവാച അവതാരി വിരിഞ്ചസ്യ നിർവലീകാമൃതം വച പ്രഹസ്യ പ്രേമഗർഭേണ തദവാംഗേന സുഗ്രഹീൽ തദസ്സവത്നമുദശ്ചരന്തമകുതോഭയം ജഗാനോൽപ്പത്യഗതയാഹനാവസരമക്ഷജാം സുഭാഷതമുഖേന വിഷജ്ജമാനം ചിത്രാവാചോ തദ്വിദിതാം ഖേചരാണാം തത്രാസ്മാസനം സ്വസ്തിവേമം ജഹി ൂയസ്താടയൻ താം സമാവൃതീം വീക്ഷ്യ ഭഗവാൻ സമവസ്ഥിത സ്വപൗരുഷേ പ്രതിഹതേ ഹതമാനോ മഹാസുര നൈച്ഛഗ്രാം ദീയമാനം ഹരിണാ വിഗതപ്രഭ ജഗ്രാഹ തൃഷികം ശൂലം ജ്വലജ്ജലനലോലുപം യജ്ഞായ ധൃതരൂപായ അഭിപ്രായാഭിചരൻ യഥാ തദോജസാനയ്ക്ക് മഹാഭടാർപ്പിതം ചകാസുദന്ധകമുധീർണധീധിരി ചക്രേണ ശിക്ഷേന നിശാദനീമിന ഹരിർയഥാ പാർശ്വപദത്രം ഉചിതം വൃഗ്നേ സ്വശീലേ ബഹുദാരിണ ഹരേ പ്രത്യേക വിസ്തീർണമുരോ വിഭൂതിമൽ പ്രവൃദ്ധരോഷസ കഠോരമുഷ്ടിന നദൻ പ്രകൃത്യാന്ധരധീയതാസുരാ തേനേത്ഥമാഹ നക്ഷത്ര ഭഗവാൻ ആദിസൂകര മാകമ്പതമന ക്വാവി സ്രജാഹതമിവദ്വിവ അധോവൃദാസജന്മായം യുഗമായേശ്വരേ ഹരോ യാം വിലോക്യ പ്രജാസ്രസ്താമീനിദേശ്യോപസംയമം പൂർവോർവായ ശ്ചന്നാസ്തമ പാംസോണൈരയൻ ദിഭ്യോ നിവേദുർഗ്രാവാണം ക്ഷേപണേ പ്രഹിതാമിവം ബഹുബിർയക്ഷരക്ഷോവി പത്യശ്വരലവഞ്ചരൈ ആദതായ വിരൽ സൃഷ്ട ഹിംസ്രാ വാചോദി വൈശസാഃ പ്രാദുഷ്കൃതാനാമായാനാമാസുരീണാം വിനാശയൻ സുദർശനാസ്ത്രം ഭഗവാൻ പ്രായം തത്ര ദൈതം ത്രിപാൽ തദാതിദേ സമഭവൽ സഹസാ ഹൃദിവേപദോ സ്മരന്ത്യാവർത്തുരാലേശം സ്തനാ ചാസ്രവൽ പ്രസുസ്രുവേ വിനഷ്ടാസു സ്വമായാസു ഭൂയശ്ചാവജ്യകേശവം ഋഷോപഗുഹമാനോമം ദൃശേ വസ്തിതം ബഹി തന്മുഷ്ടിർവിനിർഗ്നന്ദം വജ്രസാരൈരഥോക്ഷജ കരേണ കർണമൂലേഹൻ യഥാത്വാഷ്ട്രം മരുൽപതി സ ആഹതോ വിശുചിതാഹ്യവജ്ഞയ പരിഭ്രമൽഘാത്രമുദസ്ഥലോചന വിശീർണവാഹംഗ്രോ ലളിതോ നഭസ്വതൗദിഷയാനം തമകുണ്ഠവർച്ചസം കരാളദംഷ്ടംബരിരക്ഷതം അജാതയോ വീക്ഷശംസുരാഗത അഹോ ഇമാം കോലിഭേദ സംസ്ഥിതിം യം യോഗിനോ യോഗ സമാധിനാരഹ്യോ ധ്യായന്തിലിംഗാലസദോ മുമുക്ഷയ തസ്യേഷ ദൈത്യർഷവദാഹദോ മുഖം പ്രവശ്യം സ്തനുമുത്സർജ ഏതോദോ പാർഷദാവസ്യ ശാപാദ്യ പുനഃകലിമയസ്ഥാനേ പ്രബൽസ്യേദേഹ ജന്മഭി ദേവാ ഊജോ നമോ നമസ്താഖിലയജ്ഞഹേ തന്തുവേ സ്ഥിതോ ഗൃഹീത്വാ മനസത്വമൂർത്തയെ ദൃഷ്ട്യാഹോയം ജഗദാമരുന്ദനം സ്തൽപാദഭക്ത്യാം വയമേഷണവൃതാഃ മൈത്രേയവാച ഏവം ഹിരണ്യാക്ഷമസ്യ വിക്രമം സസാധയിത്വാ ഹരിരാദിസൂകര ജഗാമലോകം സുമഖണ്ഡിതോത്സവ പുഷ്കരവിഷ്ടരാദിവീ മയാ യഥാനോത്തമവാദിതേ ഹരേ കൃത അവതാരസ്യ സുമിത്ര ജ്യേഷ്ഠിതം യഥാ ഹിരണ്യാക്ഷമുദാര വിക്രമോ മഹാമൃതേ ക്രീഡനവം നിരാകൃതാഃ സൂതവാച ഇതി കൗഷാരവാഖ്യാതം ആശ്രിത്യ ഭഗവത്കഥാം ക്ഷതാനന്ദം വരേ ലേവേ മഹാഭാഗവതോ ദ്വിജ അന്വേഷാം പുണ്യശ്ലോകാനാം ഉദ്ധാമേശസാം സദാം ഉപശ്രുതി ഭവേൻ മോദാ ശ്രീവത്സാംഗ്യ കിം പുനഃ യോ ഗജേന്ദ്രം ജഷഗ്രസ്തം ധ്യായന്തം ചരണാംബുജം ക്രോശന്തീനാം കരേണൂനാം കൃച്ഛദോ മോചയൽദ്രുതം തം സുഖാരാധ്യം ഋജുമിർ അനന്യശരണേ നൃവി കൃതജ്ഞ ഗോണസേവീത ദുരാരാധ്യമസാധുവി യോ വൈ ഹിരണ്യാക്ഷവധം മഹാത്ഭുതം വിക്രീഡിതം കാരണസൂകരാത്മന ശൃണോതി ഗായത്രി മോദരേഞ്ജസ വിമുച്യതേ ബ്രഹ്മവദാദ വിദ്വിജാഃ ഏതന്മഹാപുണ്യമലം പവിത്രം ശിഷാം പ്രാണേന്ദ്രിയാണം ഇതി ശൗര്യവർദ്ധനം നാരായണോന്തേ ഗതിരംഗശൃണുതാം ശ്രീമൽഭാഗവേ മഹാപുരാണേ തൃതീയസ്കന്ധേ ഹിരണ്യാക്ഷോധോ നാമ ഏകേന വംശോധ്യായാം. സോ ദാറ്റ് 19th ചാപ്റ്റർ ആക്ച്വലി ഫിനിഷസ് ദി ഡെത്ത് ഓഫ് ഹിരണ്യാക്ഷ. വി ഹാവ് ടു റീഡ് ദി റെസ്റ്റ് ഓഫ് ദി ചാപ്റ്റേഴ്സ് ലേറ്റർ ബിക്കോസ് വി കവർഡ് ദിസ് 20th ചാപ്റ്റർ ഓൾസോ. സോ വിച്ച് ഐ വിൽ ഡു ഇൻ ദി നെക്സ്റ്റ് സൺഡേ. സോ ഇഫ് ദേർസ് എനി ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻസ് ഓർ കമന്റ്സ് പ്ലീസ്.
Why in Bhagavad-gita you say he actually lived 3.3?
Yeah, 71.
71.
4.32.
Yeah, 4.32. So Krishna comes in the day of Brahma, so how did he actually see all of this?
Yeah, Krishna's appeared many times before. It's not only in this Chaturyuga Krishna's appeared. Krishna's appeared in the before, even different kalpas Krishna appeared all the time. All these pastimes are repeated in all those kalpas. So Srimad Bhagavatam exists even before Krishna. That's what you have to remember. Krishna's pastimes and activities in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that is available even before Krishna's appearance in this last appearance here in this world. So the Swayambhu Manu's case, Swayambhu Manu received Srimad Bhagavatam and the pastimes of Krishna from Brahma. Like Brahma was given instructions from Srimad Bhagavatam by Krishna himself. So that knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam came to Swayambhu Manu as well. And he knew that the glorifying Krishna and his different incarnations is the responsibility of the king. That is why he did perform them. It is going back to a very, very, very long time span in the creation. So Angama Manu was present in the first, if you look into 14 Manus who appears in one day of Lord Brahma. So Angama Manu is the first Manu who appears. After that, we are only now at the 8th Manu, who is known as the Vaivasva Manu, son of Vaivasvaradhareva. So in between, there are 7 Manus have gone. So you can imagine each Manu had 4.32 million times 71 times number of years they have ruled this planet. And so in all these different Manus times, they appear in one day of Lord Brahma, all this happened, which is known as one Kalpa. So you have to, perhaps the best thing would be to take a paper and write it on all this number of years of all these different Manus and add on and get a feel for the time span of Lord Brahma's life. And then you will see that what an amount of time we are talking about. These references to. And Krishna appears in different kalpas, all in one day of Lord Brahma. Krishna appears all the time. So all these pastimes are known to him even before. If you live in the third canto, there is an interesting part of it, which is very, very interesting. When Brahma spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Narada Muni, if you live in the third canto, you'll see that. Brahma mentioned all pastimes of Krishna to Narada Muni. In three chapters, he gave Srimad Bhagavatam to Narada Muni. And in those three chapters, Brahma explained the pastimes of Krishna in depth. But deliberately, Brahma kept the instance when he was punished by Krishna. See, he deliberately kept it out while telling his son, Narada Muni, because it's difficult for a father to tell his son that I did all these things and at the end I had gone through this severe chastisement in Vrindavanam. I had to bear this. It was difficult for Krishna to say that. And more interesting than that, there's another side also. Sri Narada Muni was aware of what happened to him with Krishna in Dwaraka once. Probably you know this story, what happened to Narada Muni in Dwaraka. Sri Narada Maharshi was present there and Krishna was living there with his 16,108 wives. And many people just started talking about Krishna, saying that how can Krishna be present in all the palaces at the same time? Although they all had separate palaces, how could Krishna be present in all the palaces at the same time? So Narada Muni said to them that Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Is there anything difficult for him to do? If you're not 16,000, 16 million wives, he can maintain them and look after them. That's not difficult. But people who listened to Narada Muni wouldn't accept that. And they kept questioning Narada Muni, saying to him, that's all right, but have you seen this really? I mean, you know, it's all right, you're saying something. But in reality, have you seen Narada Muni? They asked Narada Muni that Krishna is present in every house. In the Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful description of that. Sri Shukan says to Parishad about it. And this very Sukadeva Sri Shukan also himself has fallen into Krishna's maya at some time. That's also there in the Bhagavatam. So it's only to show that Krishna is Yogeshwara. He is the supreme controller of all the mystic powers in this world. There's nothing you can imagine beyond what Krishna is capable of. Anyway, what happened was, Narada Muni, ultimately, due to pressure from the public, decided to test it. He said, at least I should convince myself before I go and tell everybody that I have seen Krishna. So he decided to go and look himself. So first he went to Krishna's first wife, is Rukmini. Went to Rukmini's palace. And he saw there, Rukmini was looking after Krishna very nicely, offering all nice things to eat, and Krishna was having a discussion with Rukmini about it. So Krishna sends to boy, Narada Muni has come. After all, he is present in everyone's heart and knows what is going on inside also. So he respected, actually received Narada Muni very nicely, and at the end told sage to Narada Muni, we have not seen you for a very, very long time. You should keep coming often and tell us, because you know we are householders. You know what kind of things we do as householders. Our life is not very spiritual in that sense. Krishna is saying this to Narada Muni. And so Krishna said to Narada Muni like this, and you should come and visit us. Narada Muni said, that's fine, I'll come again and And Rukmini at the same time told Adamani, we haven't seen this great sage for such a long time. Why has he not turned up? And all these questions, normal conversation, you know, all happened. Adamani left and went away. The next palace he went to was Satyabhama's. When he walked in there, he saw Krishna is playing chess with Satyabhama there together. They were playing chess. And it was almost a stage that if Satyabhama has moved one more, pawn or the different things on that, bishops and crooks and all that, one more move was enough, Krishna would have lost the game. It was at that stage. So when Narada Muni walked in, Krishna thought this is the right way to escape from this situation. So he said to Satyabhama, Satyabhama, have you seen who has come? And do you know what we are doing in front of this great sage? And he started apologizing to Narada Muni. We are like this, you know, she said to Narada Muni, unless you come and tell us something about spiritual life, this is the type of activities we are busy with in our household life. Saying this, he just gave one good kick to the whole chessboard and everything and threw it off from there. And started receiving Narada Muni there in a very nice way. Told Satyabhama, bring everything for the worship of the Sri Narada Maharshi and all that. So Narada Muni started thinking, do I need any more proof that if this is the story in Satyabhama's house? He decided to go to a few more palaces. Went to Jambavadi's, went to Kalini's, went to Mitravinda's, 5-6. In every house, Narada Muni could see Krishna was engaged in some activity or the other with his wife and living a proper householder life in his own way. More than that, what is so interesting was that in one house, there it was sun was shining, the other was it was snowing. Completely opposite weather from each palace he was experiencing in this mystic power of Krishna. So after about 10 or 12 houses, Narada Muni said 16,000 is a lot to go to. It's pointless. I had enough proof now that I have seen who is Krishna. Let me go back and tell the people what I have seen. So Narada Muni started walking back. At that time, one person came and tapped on Narada Muni's shoulder. And he was policeman, actually. Policeman means one of the keepers of that place, like policeman here. So Narada Muni could not understand. He said, Krishna wants to see you now. He said, he told Narada Muni this. Narada Muni said, is your name Sri Narada Muni? He asked him like this. He said, yes. He said, then Krishna wants to, in a respectable way, he put it to him, Krishna wants to see you now. No, I've just been there, that's why he wants to see you now, he said. So Narada Muni, not realizing what's going to happen, with a little bit of fear in the heart, went with him to see the Lord. He took him to Rukmini's palace straight away. There, Krishna is addressing Narada Muni. It is a verse in the Bhagavad, my dear son. First time Krishna calling Narada Muni as his own son. He says to Narada Muni, I am a person, that is where Krishna's that greatness in that words. I am a person who has spoken religious principles in this world. Krishna says this to Narada Muni. The principle of religious life I have spoken to this world. But I am not only a person who has spoken it, I am only also a person who has practiced it, what I have spoken. In other words, grihasthashrama dharmam, varnashrama dharma has come from Krishna. How a brahmachari should live, how a householder should live, how a vanaprastha person should live, how a sannyasi should live. Krishna has explained it in the Ekadasi Skandam in detail. Everything is there in the Bhagavatam and in the Bhagavad Gita also. And I am not a person who has just spoken something and walked out of this world. In all my life, I have acted according to what I have spoken. So as a householder, if I have married 16,000 wives, I can look after 16,000. What to talk about another 16 million? It's not a problem. I just want you to understand that, he said to Narada Muni. Narada Muni just paid his obeisances, quietly walked out of the scene. So this is how it is. Everything in Krishna's activities throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, you will notice, it's beyond our comprehension. Through our science and technology, you can't analyze Krishna. Krishna's activities are beyond the laws of material nature. All the scientific theories and all other things are things below the laws of material nature. Because scientists cannot break those laws. They have no idea how to break them. So their inventions and their vision analysis is limited. It is under the laws of material nature. But all Krishna's activities are above the laws of material nature. That is why he is different. He is this yogic power, Yogeshwara, as he is referred to in the Bhagavadam as well as in the Bhagavad Gita. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna. The last words in the Bhagavad Gita says, isn't it? Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partho Dharodhara. That this Yogeshwara Krishna is full of yogic potencies, yogic power, which transcends all the material laws. Material laws have no accessibility there. No material laws you can apply to Krishna. Because all material laws, if we talk about laws of gravity, it doesn't apply to Krishna. Krishna can change the laws of gravity if he wants it. And all the different pastimes of Krishna is strongly pointing out this to us. That is why Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is what we have to get from that. Okay, we'll stop this 20 past. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.
In the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a there is a reference to there is a reference in the Bhagavatam where it says that who should hear Srimad Bhagavatam? That question is raised in the beginning of the Bhagavatam and at the end of Srimad Bhagavatam as well. That question is there. Who should hear Srimad Bhagavatam? When Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, he had invited people who are known as, he says, those who are very fortunate and those who have a taste for hearing about Krishna, or that's known as rasigas. Rasiga means one who has got rasam. Rasam means the mellows. One who has got the mellows, he can relish Srimad Bhagavatam. And those who also are fortunate, because why it is Srimad Bhagavatam, to hear Srimad Bhagavatam is considered fortunate, there are reasons for that. And if you see the glorifications of Bhagavatam in the other Puranas, particularly you will notice why it is so important to understand that to hear Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be such a great fortune for various reasons. It so happened that Sri Narada Muni came to this world after Krishna has left this world. After Krishna has finished his pastimes in this world for 125 years at the end of Dwapara Yugam, and Krishna has returned back to his spiritual abode, one day Narada Muni thought that I should go and see what's going on in this planet Earth, and how things are changing, and what is going on as far as the human species, what's left behind here. So it was at that time that Krishna came here, Narada Muni came here, and during Narada Muni's travels to so many places, eventually he ended up in Vrindavan. He arrived in Vrindavan. So when Narada Muni arrived in Vrindavan, by then he had traveled through so many other holy places like Haridwar and Srirangam and Rameshwaram, Dwaraka, so many places Sri Narada Muni visited. And it was after that he arrived in Vrindavanam. So when he arrived in Vrindavanam, it was the last place where he wanted to check the situation with the devotees, or how the devotees are, actually interested in chanting the holy name, or how much they are involved in studying Srimad Bhagavatam. This was the purpose of the visit. So when Narada Muni came here, all he could see was that there was a drastic change in the whole world. By chance, in Vrindavanam, he saw a very interesting scene. And in the Padma Puranam, these things are discussed in detail. when Narada Muni arrived on the scene, he saw a very unusual thing. There was a young lady sitting there, and there were two people. There were two old people lying on either side of her. They looked around 75 to 80 years old, and she was around 20 or 22 years old, around very young lady. And he also saw that she was addressing them, "My dear sons, please wake up, please wake up." When Narada Muni saw this scene, he was pretty unusual thing that two old men who looked around 80 years old lying there, virtually in a unconscious state, and they had no life in them. And she was calling them as her sons, and she was telling them to wake up. And she looked very young and energetic, but at the same time, these two old men whom she was addressing as her children looked as though they had no life in them, and there was no chance of them coming back to life. Narada Muni, when he saw this scene, he went up to her and asked her that what is this situation like this? Why is that you are calling them as your sons and asking them to wake up, and they seems to be in this condition, and it looks as though there is no proper comparison between your ages. You look very young and they look so old. So this lady, young lady, told Sri Narada Muni, "I am Bhakti Devi. My name is Bhakti. I am personified form of Bhakti, devotion. And these two are, one is knowledge, jnanam, and the other one is renunciation, vairagyam. These are two of my children, and they are in that shape, and when we have come here, I am trying to get them back to life, but there seems to be no life in them. They are virtually here." And she started crying, saying this. So Narada Muni asked her about how she came to this situation. So she said that after the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, left this world and went back to the spiritual world, I was requested to come here to this world to see and to help people. And she said, "Ulpanne Dravide Deshe." That is where I came. I took birth in the Dravida Desham. Dravida Desham is current South India. And when I got birth here, when I appeared in this world, at that time, all the other lot of demigods like Ganges, Yamuna personified, and so many others also accompanied me here. I wanted to see whether anybody will accept me and whether they will welcome me here. In other words, whether anyone will have a desire to cultivate Krishna consciousness. In other words, that is what she was trying to find out. And these two, who are my children, knowledge and renunciation, have accompanied me all this time. But it so happened that after some time, they lost interest in me. So everywhere I was going to visiting people, asking them, "Will you welcome me?" And many of the people started telling me, "At the moment we are very busy, please go to the next door." That is how they welcomed me here. So in that process, I had to leave there. And I started going traveling further. When I got to Karnataka, I had a little bit of life there. Not much, a little bit of life. And the same thing happened to me in Maharashtra also. But after I finished Karnataka and Maharashtra, I went to Gujarat, which is mentioned in the Shastra as Gurjaram. So I went to Gurjaram. And the people there, they never welcomed me. That is how it says in the Puranam. They never welcomed me there. All that they wanted was that they wanted us to leave that way. So eventually, not knowing what to do now, next, you can understand why this has happened. That when Krishna left this world in Dwaraka, after he left from Dwaraka and disappeared, it was Krishna's desire that all the members of the family and most of the other devotees who were present there, they also left this planet. But the result was at that time that virtually this devotion, the process of the Krishna consciousness or a devotional life has come, was coming to an end, and it had no more encouragement from the public. And devotion or bhakti personified, she wanted to have a place where they welcome both knowledge and renunciation. Because without renunciation, devotion will find it very, very hard to sustain. So none of them were welcomed. And in addition to that, it says there that when we came to Vrindavanam, there was a slight change. How did that change happen in Vrindavanam? That is also very interesting. That when we got to Vrindavanam, when we were in Vrindavanam, nothing has happened to knowledge and renunciation. But me, who lost my own youth and who was also in the old person's hell or condition like them, I got back my youth. This is what Bhakti Devi said. I got back my youth. So Narada Muni wanted to know how that has happened. And that answer to that is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. How that in that life Bhakti Devi got back. Yadohane vahanane. In the Srimad Bhagavatam there is a verse like this. The verse is that when Krishna went to Mathura to kill Kamsa, when Akrura has taken him to Mathura from Vrindavanam, and Krishna went along with Akrura to Mathura. And at that time, that first day evening, when they arrived there, Krishna took rest with the other, with Balaram and all the other cowherd boys who went with him. But the next day, Krishna got dressed up in the morning and wanted to see the town of Mathura. So Krishna was wandering around in the town, and the ladies who are in Mathura, who are actually not like the gopis in Vrindavanam, who are much more sophisticated, or in other words, they were ladies from the city, who lead a different kind of life than the gopis of Vrindavanam. When they saw Krishna and Balaram, they sang a few verses. It is Sri Shugan says all these things to Parikshit Maharaj in his explanation of Krishna's travels through Mathura. So there is one verse which talks about this. Yadohane vahanane. That the Vrindavana ladies, how fortunate they are. In other words, the ladies in Mathura were talking about the gopis in Vrindavanam. Why? They had such a nature that everything what they did in Vrindavanam at the time when Krishna was there was such that in all their activities they always glorified Krishna. In other words, they were not very highly educated or or very learned women. But at the same time, because they had such an attachment or affection for Krishna, in their activities, they sang the glories of Krishna through various songs and they relished singing those songs. So, when they were singing these songs, this is what has actually kept their life going in Vrindavanam. That was what their whole life was. And this came through, and Sri Shukan said to Parikshit, when did they sing this song? The question, answer was given. Ya dohane vahanane. Dohana means to milk the cow. When the gopis were milking the cows in the early hours in the morning and late in the afternoon, twice they milked the cows. Both the times when they milked in the morning as well as in the evening, both the times they sang the glories of Krishna. And often when the cows didn't agree, sometimes the cows are like that. They don't allow you to milk them. At that time, when they sang the glories of Krishna, the cows allowed them to milk them. Now, if you say this to anybody in the modern world, he will find it a bit hard to understand all these things. Because, as far as he is concerned, milk is supplied by Sainsbury's, not by the cow. Because that's how much his understanding is about milking the cow is concerned. So, it is a different civilization we live today. It is, if we say to them that, oh, what's there so much a big deal about this milking the cow is concerned. Yadohane vahanane. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, when this is the interesting bits in the Bhagavatam, that when Sukadeva Goswami is talking about the life of those great devotees of Krishna, the gopis of Vrindavanam, we also have to understand their lifestyle and their the culture, what they have imbibed. This culture doesn't exist in us, so it is difficult for us to appreciate and to see that why there is such a big thing about milking the cows. For us, as far as milking the cows is concerned, and even sometimes people, I don't know how many of the modern world people realize that how the cows are fed and how the cows are looked after and how milking the cows are concerned. All that culture doesn't exist in the modern lifestyle. Our lifestyle is such that we have seen cow as a supplier of milk, but as far as that relationship between the human society and the cows is unknown to us. We have no feeling for them. We have no understanding of them. That is why we are able to happily slaughter them in the slaughterhouses without any consideration. So anyway, yadohane vahanane, milking the cows, gopis used to sing Krishna's glories, and when the cows objected to that, cows agreed to supply milk profusely to them. This is what Sri Shukan says to Parikshit. That is one instance. Secondly, when they were grinding the different types of grains for cooking or for preparing prasadam, all this time they sang the glories of Krishna. So whether they were milking the cows or grinding the grains, or sometimes when they were when they were putting the babies to sleep in the swings, when they were singing the glories of Krishna. When they were cleaning the floors and they were cleaning the house, washing them with cow dung and purifying the place, they sang the glories of Krishna. And whenever they look after the children or whenever they milking cow, no matter, in all their activities, what was in their presence was, there always the heart was filled with the pleasure or the transcendental activities of Krishna. This was their greatness, and this is what has kept them different from them. Gayandi chainam anurektadiyaha ashrugandhyaha. That is how they sang. They didn't sing just like we sing. Our way of singing is different. Gayandi chainam anurektadiyaha ashrugandhyaha. That when they sang about Krishna, ashrugandhyaha, that all the time the tears came from their eyes. Why? Thinking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, their activities, that has actually influenced them so much that they were completely moved by the pastimes of Krishna. So that is Gayandi Jainam Anurekthadiyaham Ashrugandhyaha. So in this way they enjoyed singing the pastimes of Krishna. So the gopis lived their life, and before Krishna left this planet, and also after Krishna left this planet, most of them have gone back to their places, because all these gopis were demigods. Some of them were devatas, some of them were sages personified, and some of them were the Vedas personified, Shruti personified. All had to their own abodes. So after they have lived their life here and engaged in the service of Krishna, they went back to the spiritual world. They went back to their own respective abode. So, but before they left something back in Vrindavanam. And that samskar or that culture, what they left behind in Vrindavanam, continued from then right up to even today. To some extent, to a large extent, it is still stayed back in Vrindavanam. That is, that 12 years which Krishna spent in Vrindavanam, Krishna didn't spend a very long time in Vrindavanam. If you consider that Krishna has spent 125 years on this planet, the time he spent in Vrindavanam is only 12 years. But in that 12 years, whatever pastimes Krishna has performed, these gopis have has absorbed into their life to such an extent that they were able to leave a culture in Vrindavanam before they left Vrindavanam and went back to their abode. And by Krishna's desire, that culture continued to stay in Vrindavanam for all these 5,000 years. This is the most interesting thing. Only 12 years is a very, very, very short time compared to 5,000 years of long time what we have crossed through. But in that 12 years, what the gopis have heard about, what the gopis' time, that has stayed back in Vrindavanam all these 5,000 years. The devotees in Vrindavanam, Vasis, they still release those songs of Krishna, what has come through so many hundreds of generations. So Bhakti Devi said to Srinarada Muni, when I came here with my these two old children, Jnanam and Vairagyam, but because of the songs that the gopis were singing at that time, which were sung again by the people in Vrindavanam, by the devotees in Vrindavanam, and the air that was blowing from the Kalindi river, from the Yamuna river, all these things have purified me and I got back my health again. This is how Bhakti Devi put that to Sri Narada Muni. So when Bhakti Devi said this to Sri Narada Muni was could understand that the glory of Vrindavanam is not an ordinary place, that it is Krishna's desire that this culture should stay in Vrindavanam for such a long time, and it did stay and it still will continue to stay. So after this, the Bhakti Devi asked Sri Narada Muni to help her to bring these two back, Jnanam and Vairagyam, back into a life again, normal life. So Sri Narada Muni at that time said to Bhakti Devi that don't worry about it. After all, I am Sri Narada Muni. If I can't, I will do everything what I can to get them back to life. So he consoled her, Bhakti Devi. And Sri Narada Muni started reciting all the mantras and all the Puranas, what he knew, what he wanted to try it out to see if they will come back to life again. Although he repeated all these things, there was no sign of any of them waking up. That is, they still continued to sleep and snore in the same as they were doing before. And Narada Muni was getting a little bit concerned about it at that time. And at that time, he decided that maybe I should try with Bhagavad Gita. It says in the Puranam, maybe Bhagavad Gita, after all, Krishna has spoken, it says, Gita Padher Muhur Muhum, that with his veena, he sang all the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. And still, they didn't wake up. They turned from head from one side, they were sleeping, they turned into the other side. That's all they did. They didn't make any further progress from there. So Sri Narada Muni was very concerned. He was thinking in his mind that what is this happening? Because for Narada Muni, this is a very unusual thing. For us, it's not unusual. For Narada Muni, it's a very unusual thing. Why? Because if you look into the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there, Chitrakedu's son died. And when Chitrakedu's son died, they were trying to bring some detachment to Chitrakedu's mind. Angiras Maharshi and Sri Narada Muni arrived there on the scene. You can see that in the sixth canto. So they tried to console King Chitrakedu and tell him that death is not something you can avoid, you cannot avoid it. And Chitrakedu was saying that I have got this son after such a long time of penances, and now that he has left me, why should I live, this, that and the other. So just to make him realize that that living entity, that baby who died, and Chitrakedu, that connection is not such an important one, they decided, Angiras Maharshi requested Sri Narada Muni to bring that baby back to life. And Sri Narada Muni had to call him only once, Jeevatman, that is how he's called that baby, who was dead. And that baby immediately wake up and started speaking. So Sri Narada Muni, Narada Maharshi is concerned. It's not a very unusual thing. Narada Muni can bring people back to life. So, but here we find that Sri Narada Maharshi has tried everything what he could and nothing was happening. So Narada Muni got a little bit upset, and he was very seriously thinking, what should I do next? I have promised Bhakti Devi that I'll get them back to life. So then he started praying to Krishna. So from the sky there was an answer to Narada Muni that he should perform pious activities. This was the instruction from the sky. From nowhere some instruction came over to Sri Narada Muni saying that you should perform pious activities. Now what pious activities should I perform? Narada Muni had no clear instruction. So he was in a dilemma, and then he decided to go and find out from his own spiritual master who lives in Badrinath. So Narayana Rishi is Narada Muni's spiritual master. So this Narayana Rishi lives in Badrinath, in Naranarayana Ashram. So he decided to go there and inquire from him, what is the pious activity I should perform so that I can bring them back to the normal life, both Jnanam and Vairagyam. This was his intention of travelling to Narayana Ashram. So he didn't have to go very far, but before that he saw four devotees coming from there, and they were the four Kumaras, Sanaga, Sananda, Sanadana and Sanat Kumara. Narada Muni met them on the way in Haridwar. Before he got to Narayana Ashram, in Haridwar itself they met up with the four Kumaras. So the four Kumaras asked Sri Narada Muni, when they saw him, he looked very depressed. Narada Muni looked very depressed. So they asked Narada Muni, Katham Brahman Dinamukham. That is why they asked him like this. Tell us, O great sage, what makes you feel so depressed? So when they asked Narada Muni this question, normally Narada Muni is not a very depressed person. He is in blissful nature. That is Narada Muni's normal nature. So Dina Mukha means one whose face is very much in a depressed condition or in a very, very unhappy situation. So that is why they ask this question. Katham Brahman Dina Mukham. Why your face looks so depressed? Sri Narada Muni was going to explain that, but if the same question was put to us, how we would answer that? Katham Brahman Dina Mukham. If they ask us that question will not be appropriate, because as far as we are concerned, the question should be the other way. Question should be, why you look so happy? That should be the question to us, isn't it? Because that's the only rare thing that happens in our life. Otherwise, it is not like that is the difference between us and Narada Muni's case. He's always happy. So therefore, when he gets depressed, there should be a reason behind it. And that's why the Kumaras ask that question. Whereas in our case, it's an unusual thing that hardly that we have, most of the this is the fact of life, that in our life, normal life in this world, whether, no matter who it is, anybody, it doesn't matter who it is, we have this habit of covering up ourselves all the time. Even if we are depressed, we'll still smile at people. And sometimes, I don't know whether to call it smile or just to show the teeth openly to them and to show that we are happy in this world. This is our nature. On the other hand, the personality will be suffering so much in life, in so many things, but we won't acknowledge that fact. We will still think, not a bad place to carry on, and we'll still somehow adjust this and adjust that, and somehow try to accommodate things. That's our nature. So this Katham Brahman Dina Mukham has no relevance as far as we are concerned, because we don't belong to that category of Sri Narada Muni. Narada Muni is not like that. Narada Muni is a realized soul, Sachidananda is, and he, in that condition, to feel depressed was unusual for him. So that is why the four Kumaras asked this question to Narada Muni. And Narada Muni mentioned to them, that I have been to Vrindavanam. I have went in so many places, but ultimately I had this unusual scene in Vrindavanam where I saw Bhakti Devi lying there, sitting there with two of his children who were so old, looked so old, Jnanam and Vairagyam. Please tell me what I should do about the pious activities I was requested. Sanat Kumara Maharshi told Narada Muni, have you forgotten Srimad Bhagavatam? What you have, in a similar situation, when Vedavyasa Maharshi was in distress condition, the Srimad Bhagavatam that has brought Vedavyasa Maharshi into life again. And it is through Srimad Bhagavatam that Vedavyasa Maharshi achieved the perfection of his literary activities. Vedavyasa Maharshi compiled so many Vedic literature. Eventually he compiled Vedanta Sutram also, known as Brahma Sutram. which is supposed to be the topmost Vedic literature for those who are intellectually pursuing the path of self-realization. And to the end, after that, after writing all this literature, Vedavyasa Maharshi didn't find happiness. And you have given Srimad Bhagavatam to Vedavyasa Maharshi. And that through Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedavyasa Muni regained his happiness again. Or in other words, he got out of his distressful condition and got back into his happy situation. Did you try Srimad Bhagavatam and talk to them about it? It was then that Narada Muni realized that Srimad Bhagavatam should have been recited to them. But before that, Sanakumara Maharshi told them that do not worry about it, that we will, so far, all the time you were singing Srimad Bhagavatam and others were listening. Now let us sing Srimad Bhagavatam and you should come and listen to it. And automatically they will regain their strength. The Jnanam and Vairagyam will come back to their strength again. So it is on the advice of these four Kumaras that the second time Srimad Bhagavatam was recited in Haridwar, where Sri Narada Muni was a listener. Normally Narada Muni is always a speaker. You don't find in many places Narada Muni as a listener. Most of the time Narada Muni is a speaker. In the Srimad Bhagavatam there is a discussion on the assembly of the Nimi Maharaj and the nine sages. And in that discussion in King Janaka's palace also, there you will find that Sri Narada Muni was a listener there. Normally Narada Muni is not a listener, Narada Muni is a speaker. So in this instance we find Narada Muni was a listener. And as soon as Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken in Haridwar, automatically Jnanam and Vairagyam arrived there in their full health. This is how it says in the Palmuranam. Jnanam and Vairagyam, along with their mother, the Bhakti Devi, and Jnanam and Vairagyam personified, they all together arrived on the scene. So, and they regained their health, strength back. From this you have to see that these Srimad Bhagavatam, the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam is basically, in all the glorification of Bhagavatam, it mentions very clearly, is to develop devotion, knowledge and renunciation. These are the three, Bhakti, Jnanam and Vairagyam. Bhakti, Jnana, Vairagyam is the ultimate benefit or ultimate achievement from Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to develop these three things in a human species, in the human society. And that is why Srimad Bhagavatam, whenever it is glorified in all the other Puranas also, there are other things also mentioned in the other Puranas and by all the other commentators also. You can read so many commentaries on Srimad Bhagavatam, and in all those commentaries also there are reference to various things. By reading Srimad Bhagavatam, one will reach that stage. But in all these commentaries, you will find one common factor mentioned, that Srimad Bhagavatam is ultimately intended for this purpose. What? The purpose is to develop knowledge, renunciation and devotion. Three things, Bhakti, Jnanam and Vairagyam. Because it is on the, these are the basis of self-realization. It is on the basis of this that the living entity free oneself from the material existence. So that is how the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam is mentioned there. So in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam's importance is spoken in different places, in different times. And generally, as I said, that in Vrindavanam, when they got there, that Bhakti, Jnanam and Vairagyam, they, especially Bhakti Devi, experienced a great change in her body and in her mind, purely because of the presence of the people in Vrindavanam accepted her. And because they accepted her, she got back her life again. Now, Bhakti Devi says about that before, that when she went to so many places, she was not welcomed by people. And the people did not welcome her. Automatically she lost her strength as well. Just like Jnana Vairagyam, these two things, even if Krishna offers us that, we need to have that mind to receive that, to take it from Krishna. Just like if Krishna says, okay, Krishna walks in now and says, that I have come here to give you Jnanam and Vairagyam. I don't know how many of us will actually be very happy to receive that from Krishna. There is one story that once a devotee was praying to Krishna very seriously. So seriously that this devotee wanted to go back to the spiritual world, back with Krishna. But at the same time, his attachment to the material world was not there. His attachment was so strong that on the one hand, the attachment was pulling him back, and on the other hand, he was developing the knowledge and the devotion to go back to Krishna, Krishna's planet. So Krishna also thought that because he is praying to me so seriously, one day he told him that come to me at the midday, when the after the midday arati was over, I will offer you a liberation. Maybe you should go back now if you are feeling so strongly of going back. So this person went to Krishna, and after the midday arati was over, Krishna told him that he should be in a position to go back to the spiritual world, you'll be able to give up your body. It was then that the whole scene changed. This devotee said to Krishna, I don't know whether I'm ready for it yet. This was his answer. So all this time he was preparing himself to go back to the spiritual world. But inside the heart, the renunciation required has not grown up enough. And the answer, apparently what he gave to Krishna was that in another 4 days' time, the month will come to an end. And the month, he was an old person, so he said to Krishna that after 4 days, I'll just get my pension. And when I get my pension, I'd like to collect it, hand that over to my family, and then I can come back to the spiritual world. So in other words, that is how much he was ready to go back to the spiritual world. So this is our situation also. It's not much different. We will talk about all our great Madhurya Rasam and all other rasas what we have. But when it comes to our own detachment to this material world is concerned, we are still where we have started. We haven't changed very much. The attachment is still very, very strong. So that is where Vairagyam comes in. That Bhakti and Jnanam stays or survives when there is Vairagyam. Renunciation is not there. Bhakti will take its own time. And Jnanam, Bhakti, Jnanam, Vairagyam, all these three things will eventually develop in a person by studying Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the essence of that incident story mentioned there. So, now we will go back into the third canto. We stopped last time where Swayambhuva Manu's life we were talking about. Swayambhuva Manu's long time of administration in this world, right, and come to 71 Chaturyugas. And after the 71 Chaturyugas, Swayambhuva Manu's time, the next Manu comes in. So, Brahma has started the process of creation again. Now, only difference is, by now, Brahma has created Swayambhuva Manu. Brahma has also created all the other Prajavadis and all the sages, Saptarishis, they were all there. So, now, with the Swayambhuva Manu and Brahma together continue the process of creation. That is how now, in the 20th chapter of the third canto, this is what that process of creation is mentioned there. And in that process of creation, Brahma had to accept different sangalpam. Sangalpam means resolutions he had to take. And each time when he was creating, he will create different, some of the different species, or those living entities who were already taking shelter, they were coming out with their material bodies again. And some of them were acting in an unusual manner, and Brahma had to give up that resolution and accept a new resolution. Brahma's creation, you have to understand, it is not a creation like the way we create. We create from matter. We are able to create different things from matter. But Brahma's creation is from his mind he is creating. That whatever he wanted to create, in his mind he develops it. And from bhavana or from that concept in his heart, he is able to bring that into reality, into actual existence in this world. That is how he sees that Brahma's creation are different than the way what the living entities create in this world. So this creation process, which Brahma has started, continued for a while, and so many other living entities were created. The Rakshasas have come out, Gandharvas have come out, and so many other species have come out in that process. It's mentioned in that 20th chapter. And it was after that Swayambhuva Manu, and along with that, there were so many other Prajapatis who were created. And Kardama Prajapati was one among them. one of the Prajapatis. So Lord Brahma told, requested Prajapatis, all the Prajapatis, to perform penances and to austerities and penances before they continue the further process of creation. Prajapati's intention was, Prajapatis also had to assist in the process of creation. So Kardama Prajapati, one among them, has actually was advised by Brahma that he should start the process of creation. But before that, before he enter into householder life, he should execute strong penances, austerities and penances, before he goes into the process of creation. That is how Brahma instructed Kardama Prajapati. The reason being, as we discussed before, Brahma had the experience that unless one takes to Krishna consciousness or into spiritual activities, one should not enter into householder life. This was Brahma's experience before. We have seen that, how Brahma was suffering during the process of creation. And Krishna gave Lord Brahma Chatushloki Bhagavatam, which he expanded and gave in three chapters to Sri Narada Muni. Narada Muni handed that over to Vedavyas, and then from Vedavyas to Sri Shukan and Parikshit Maharaj. Like that, Srimad Bhagavatam was given to all of them. But when Brahma took Srimad Bhagavatam as Krishna, is when he entered into the process of creation, he experienced the difficulty, and then keeping Srimad Bhagavatam in the hand, he continued the process of creation. That is what we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is from that experience that Brahma told Kardama Prajapati that first he should execute spiritual activities, or he should perform penances. So on that request from Brahma, Kardama Prajapati decided to perform perform penances for a long period of time before he entered into householder life. So Kardama Prajapati's performance penances are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. He continued his perform penances for 10,000 years. That is how it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You have to remember that this is the time in the Satyugam, in the first yuga, this is happening. So naturally, 10,000 years of performance of austerities and penances was possible for Kardama Prajapati to do that. So after this 10,000 years of austerities and penances, what has happened to Kardama Prajapati was that he was unable to come back to householder life again. This was the result of that. It says in the Srimad Bhagavatam like that, that when one has gone into spiritual life to such a high degree, or for such a long time of practicing spiritual life, has actually made him to realize the futility of the householder life, or going back into the householder life. On the other hand, his desire to go back to the spiritual world got so strong. That is what happened to him. That is what happened to Kardama Prajapati. It says in the Srimad Bhagavatam like that. So Kardama Prajapati's desire for householder life was Kardama Prajapati's desire for householder life stopped. And he did not want to go, he did not want to continue in householder life. So one day, seeing Kardama Prajapati's situation, Krishna decided to come and talk to him. Because it was Brahma's desire that these Prajapatis were created for increasing the progeny. So Krishna came to the scene and told and gave and showed himself to Kardama Prajapati. Kardama Prajapati was very pleased seeing Krishna there. But there was one special situation here. Due to this long, long period of austerities and penances, Kardama Prajapati has completely lost his health. In other words, he has forgotten his body so much that he didn't know that he did not take care of his body very well. And it was such a long time, for 10,000 years of time, that he could not take care of his body properly. He has completely lost himself in this process of worshipping Krishna. And here also, there is something very interesting to note. There are so many things in the story of Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi to be noted. Kardama Prajapati, that normally you can imagine a sage, how he performs his penances. Normally, if you talk about a sage, automatically the thing that comes to your mind is a sage who stays in a yoga posture, Ashtanga yoga system, fully focused his mind, meditating on a Supreme Personality of Godhead with his half eyes closed. That is the position of a yogi or a great sage that will come to our mind. But Kardama Prajapati's method of worship was completely different. Out of the 9 processes of devotional service, which is in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnor, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakhyam, Atmanivedanam, there are 9 processes of devotional service mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, out of these 9 processes, normally what happens is, majority of the cases, they take to only one of the process very seriously. For example, if somebody who gets attracted to hearing about Krishna or the process of Shravanam, say hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then that person, if he gets used to it after a while, he will lose interest in all the other 8 processes. This is normal. This is not an unusual thing. Only thing is that person has to have or develop that taste for hearing nicely. And when that taste develops, he would not like to spend his time in any of the other 8 processes of devotional life. That is the way normally. Similarly, it is true with other processes also. If somebody gets attracted to some other process, for example, Vandanam, paying obeisances to Krishna. There are brahmanas who used to do that. They will pay thousands of obeisances every day to Krishna. Simply paying obeisances to Krishna. Getting up and paying obeisances to Krishna. That was another way of surrendering to Krishna. And similarly, Dasyam, serving Krishna in the temple as a devotee. Always looking after Krishna's interests. Serving the devotees. Serving Krishna in the temple. This kind of service to Krishna. Dasyam. Or like this, out of the 9 processes, and kirtanam, or singing the glories of Krishna, is only one of those processes. So sometimes you will find devotees who are attracted to kirtanam, they will like to engage themselves in kirtanam all the time. They have no attraction for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. They have no attraction for deity worship. They have no attraction for any of the other processes. Their attraction is for kirtanam. They want to hear singing the glories of Krishna. But those who are attracted to hearing the glories of Krishna, all these processes is only meant to instigate the memory of Krishna strongly in our mind all the time. That is the purpose of all these 9 processes. By practicing these processes continuously, one will be able to remember Krishna all the time. And that is what is expected. What Rupa Goswami says, Yena gena pivayena mana Krishna niveshayal. Somehow or the other, Rupa Goswami says, somehow or the other, we should get our mind into the thoughts of Krishna all the time. And out of these strong 9 processes of devotional service, one of the most powerful one is the hearing process, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Because there is no other transcendental activity like Srimad Bhagavatam which can bring the heart and mind so strongly in the thoughts of Krishna compared to all the other processes. But that does not mean that the other processes are in any way less important. Other processes also works. But our Kardama Prajapati did not take to Shravanam nor to Kirtanam. That is the most interesting thing. Kardama Prajapati had no desire to hear anything because there was nobody to speak about Krishna there. Neither he had any desire to sing the glories of Krishna, because obviously he had no much of a taste for music, or obviously he was not attracted to that. But he had one attraction, and that is mentioned in the Bhagavatam as his attraction was for Archana. Archana means that he had only one occupation in the forest. He was so busy in collecting all the fruits and flowers possible from the forest, because he lived in the forest 10,000 years in the forest. It's not a simple thing. These 10,000 years, all what he did was, he collected all the fruits and flowers available, and somehow he managed to find one of the deities of Krishna. From a stone, he managed to carve it, and brought it and installed it underneath a tree. And after installing the deity, all the flowers what he has collected, he picked up one after the other and started offering to this deity, Krishna's deity, which he has installed. And this was his method of worship. And this was his happiness. And this he cannot, you cannot take it away from him, because he found so much happiness in offering these flowers to Krishna. And all the fruits or all the other, whatever one could offer to Krishna, he collected from the forest and offered that to Krishna in 4 or 5 times a day to please the Supreme Lord. So he got engaged into this, what is known as Archanam. Archanam was the process what Kardama Prajapati pursued all the time. So when Kardama Prajapati was doing this, that this process of devotional service known as Archanam, he got his mind got attached to it. And sometimes he will start his, after a few hours of rest in the night, he will start his Archanam in the morning, and sometimes it will used to last for hours together. Not that he used to carry a lot of flowers and offer, one after the other, each leaf he will pick it up and offer it to Krishna. And he used to enjoy doing that, offering the flowers to Krishna, that was his happiness. So this kind of things happen sometimes in the history. You find there was one Swamiji, he was known as Pushpanjali Swamiya. Pushpanjali Swamiji he was called. Why? Because he was similar to Kardama Prajapati. Lot of people used to come, they used to bring a lot of flowers and simply give it to him, lotus flowers and all different varieties of flowers. And this Pushpanjali Swamiji, his happiness was just offering this Pushpam to Krishna and constantly offering one after the other. And in the whole day he could offer, in hours together he could do it, and he will even forget how much time has passed. To such an extent he was engrossed in this transcendental activity. So Kardama Prajapati was also like that. So he continued doing this, and for 10,000 years he continued this offering. So when Krishna came to see Kardama Prajapati's condition, he was in tears. Krishna was in tears. Why? Krishna has one one attitude. When he finds that a devotee like Kardama Prajapati, who did not even care for his health or body, and he has become so sincere in his service to Krishna, that Krishna could not bear that condition of seeing Kardama Prajapati in that state. In the Srimad Bhagavatam it says there, at that point, from Krishna's eyes tears came. Tears flowed to such an extent, it formed almost the size of a lake. And it is known as Bindusaras. Bindusaras is the lake which has come from the tears that has come from Krishna's eyes by seeing Kardama Prajapati's condition. Kardama Prajapati looked as though like a straw which had virtually no strength in him, but only the glowing eyes, the happiness what he was experiencing seeing Krishna at that point, made Kardama Prajapati was Krishna's. This is one of the Krishna's Krishna's attitude towards devotee. When he sees a devotee is strongly desiring to serve Krishna to such a degree, giving up all other attachment to this material world and to all one's own comforts, one is willing to sacrifice and serve Krishna to such a degree of sincerity, Krishna accepts that devotee wholeheartedly. And that is what that story is trying to show us, that this situation happened to Kardama Prajapati's life has actually made Krishna to shed tears. And Krishna requested Kardama Prajapati that he should get married. This was the request from Krishna. Kardama Prajapati said to Krishna that after performing these penances for 10,000 years, I have lost all my desire to come back into this householder life again. Krishna said to him, nothing will happen. Go into householder life. Everything will be taken care of. And not only, so that time Kardama Prajapati started thinking, after this 10,000 years in this forest, never worked, never earned any salary, never had any money, nothing in the bank, not a house even to live, who is going to offer me a wife now to get a married life? This was going through Kardama Prajapati's head. Krishna said to him, don't worry about it. That from third day from now, Swayambhuva Manu, who is the emperor of the whole planet, will come here and he will hand over his second daughter, which is the second daughter is, her name is Devahuti Devi. Devahuti Devi will be handed over to you in marriage, please marry her. And Kardama Prajapati started wondering whether I will have any children after the marriage, because he has grown so old and his health was in such a condition that he could not believe that what is going to happen to me in my married life. Because married life, according to Shastra, not only Shastra, even from the very beginning, it says there, Prajayai Grahamedhinam, the having children is the goal of married life. That is why this original concept of marriage came into this material world. In Brahma's creation itself, you will notice, when Swayambhu Manu and Shatrubha were created, Prajayai Grahamedhinam, that to have children is the purpose of the married life. So otherwise there was no necessity for marriage. This was the concept from the very beginning. So in that understanding, Kardama Prajapati felt that if I do not have children, then my purpose of the marriage, what will happen? Then it was that Krishna told Kardama Prajapati that don't have to worry about it. You will not have one, you will have 9 girls will be born from this marriage. 9 girls. 9 girls, Kardama Prajapati, when he heard that, he got a shock to himself. He said, he thought himself, even today if you talk about it, normally if you are responsible parents, they will normally wonder, what will I do with them? How do I hand them over to somebody in marriage? All these thoughts will come to a father or a mother automatically. And that will be a great concern. Even with one daughter, sometimes this worry comes to them, to the parents. But here we see that 9 girls will be born from this marriage. And on the 10th one, Sahaham Swam Shagalaya Tvadvīryena Mahāmune. Krishna says to Kardama Prajapati, after that, I will come as your son, as the 10th child. And when Kardama Prajapati heard this, that Krishna is going to come as his son, as the 10th child, Sahaham Swam Shagalaya Tvadvīryena Mahāmune. Krishna is addressing Kardama Prajapati, Mahāmune, O great sage, after this, my Amshavadaram, or partial expansion, incarnation, I have come, as which came later as Kapila Vasudev, Tahaham Swam Shangalaya Tadvirena Mahamuni, that I will appear as your son, as and through your mother, I will bring back the philosophy of Sankhyam and philosophy of devotion back to this world which has not been there for a while. So this way, Kardama Prajapati was instructed by Krishna. And it was only after hearing this instruction from Krishna, Kardama Prajapati decided to wait and see what happens. That Swayambhu Manu was going to come in third day from then and was going to bring his daughter. Swayambhu Manu, as I have said before, had 3 daughters, Akuti, Devahuti and Prasuti. Now, Akuti and Prasuti, compared to Devahuti, it looks like that from the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Devahuti was a much more advanced personality spiritually. That you will find out when you go through this, the next few chapters, why Devahuti was so special compared to Akuti and Prasuti. So, Devahuti Devi was the daughter of Swayambhu Manu, and Devahuti Devi's mother, her name was Shatarupa. So, Swayambhu Manu, Shatarupa and Devahuti Devi, all 3 of them decided to come and see Kardama Prajapati. So when Krishna told Kardama Prajapati that Devahuti Devi will be brought and given to him in marriage, at the same time, Swayambhu Manu was thinking about the marriage of these 3 daughters. It was then that Lord Brahma, Swayambhu Manu normally consulted Lord Brahma because he was the first Manu in this creation. So Swayambhu Manu was instructed by Lord Brahma that he should hand over Devahuti Devi in marriage to Kardama Prajapati. And that is how the instructions to Swayambhu Manu arrived. Swayambhu Manu took Devahuti Devi and Shatrubha Devi together, and they travelled to see Kardama Prajapati to find out who this Kardama Prajapati is, what he is doing. So when they came, they inquired through all the forests and everything. Ultimately, they reached the ashram where Kardama Prajapati was performing penances. So when Swayambhu Manu arrived there with Shatrubha Devi and Devahuti Devi, what he could see there was a personality there sitting underneath a tree and offering flowers to this deity there. And seeing this, Swayambhu Manu's heart sunk. Virtually sunk. as well as Shatrughna also thought that, what a decision have we made? Why has Brahma told us to bring our daughter and hand her over to this person, seeing his condition? But still, when they came there, Kadama Prajapati was aware of that arrival, that they were going to come. They welcomed Swayambhu Manu and Shatrughna, and they started their conversation. So when the conversation started, Swayambhu Manu mentioned to Kadama Prajapati that, after all, you are a Brahmana who has been performing these penances for so long a time, and we are Kshatriyas, we are kings, we rule this planet. And Kadama Prajapati in turn appreciated Swayambhu Manu's coming there and told him that it is your responsibility to make sure that we sages who are performing penances in the forest, we get protected properly and looked after. So these things were spoken each other. And from there, in that conversation, you will find in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the two personalities, Swayambhu Manu represented the Kshatra Dharma, or the Kshatriyas, and Kardama Prajapati represented the Brahmana Dharma, or the Brahmanas. So if these two things, Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, if they work together nicely, this planet will become a place which is in a good condition. In other words, the human life will become attain its perfection. That is why in Krishna's creation of the Varnashrama Dharma, Brahmana and Kshatriya Dharma has a very higher responsibility. If Brahmana and Kshatriya Dharma together perform well, they cooperate together and actively engage in their activities, then the Varnashrama Dharma, and in return all the other remaining human society, will function better. But we can see today that in the absence of Brahmana and Kshatriya Dharma, what we have today in this world is either it is Vaishyas or Shudras. It is the Vaishya and Shudra coordination that is working in this world today. And the result also, you can see that this activities which is together done in the name of the modern industries and business, and the labor force what supports this modern industry, or this is the combined activities or combined relationship between the Shudras and the Vaishyas and the Shudras, do not actually bring any spiritual life in this world. They cannot do that because they do not have that, the qualities of the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. So all these things were discussed in that meeting between Swayambhu Manu and Kardama Prajapati. And after that, Kardama Prajapati, Swayambhu Manu mentioned to Kardama Prajapati about the purpose of his visit to Kardama Prajapati, as he was instructed by Brahma that, I brought my daughter, Devahuti Devi, and I would like to offer her in marriage to you. Kardama Prajapati was aware of this because he was also instructed by Krishna to accept Devahuti Devi as his wife. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam it says there, Adyo Vaivahiko Vidhi. This kind of marriage, it was the first time a marriage has happened in this way. Why? That's also interesting to note. Why? On the bride side, there is the bride, bride's parents, father and mother. On the bridegroom's side, who is there? Only the bridegroom. That's it. There's nobody else. The bridegroom was Kardama Prajapati, and the bride was Devahuti Devi, and the bride's parents. This is all the marriage, nothing else. And it was such a simple marriage. It says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Adyo Vaivahiko Vidhi, that never a marriage has happened in such a simple way as it has happened in the case of Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi. So such a simple marriage it was. Adyo Vaivahiko Vidhi. And referring to this, compare about the marriages what we perform today. Just see the amount of waste. Amount of energy and time and money we waste on marriages today. Just compare that with Kardama Prajapati's marriage to Devahuti Devi. That was the difference. That was the way Kardama Prajapati's marriage was performed. And many of the Vedic literatures you will find that all the marriages were kept very, very simple. It was not meant to be performed in a lavish scale, what happens today. Today, Everyone thinks that marriage is a ceremony which should be performed in a very large scale, feeding thousands of people, inviting all the film stars, all the Bollywood movies, and in addition to that, all the politicians. And it should be done as large scale, with spending as much money as possible. This is not the Vedic custom. Vedic custom never demands this. This is one of the many unusual practices that has come into the human society. Vedic system is always demands that the marriage activity should be performed as simple as possible. And there are so many other instructions related to marriage given in the Vedic literature. None of them are followed anymore. All that is happening today is today's marriages are performed completely on the wrong understanding that it is simply meant for an extension of their own pride or sense gratification, whatever you like to call it. That is how it is. Adyo vaivahigo vidhi. Anyway, this simple marriage happened. Remember that Devahuti Devi was a princess, and the comforts she was used to. She had hundreds and hundreds of servants and servant maids to serve her in her palace in Swayambhu Manu's palace. And when Swayambhu Manu wanted to hand her over to Kardama Prajapati, tears were coming from his eyes. Why? Swayambhu Manu thought, what will happen to my daughter? How she will live with this person? He hasn't got even a house to live. What to talk about for having any other comforts? Shadaruba, being the mother, she had much more concern. Generally, when the daughters are married, different relatives and parents have different concerns about the bride. That we know in the those who are used to discussing marriages will know about it. How marriage causes so much anxiety from the bride's side. The bride's mother will think that, has he got enough wealth or financial support to provide my daughter and look after her? This will be the bride's mother's concern. The bride's father's concern will be, is he coming from a good background, about his qualities, is he good enough in otherwise? And like this, everyone has different concerns when they marry their daughter. So Shadaruba and Swayambhu Manu also had a lot of concerns. How the life will be led in the forest, by whether Devahuti Devi will be ever able to live in that forest with Kardama Prajapati and marry and live a proper life. Kardama Prajapati was silent. He never answered or said anything about it. But fortunately, Devahuti Devi took up the conversation. And she told Swayambhu Manu and Shadaruba Devi that you should not shed tears. You should remember that you are marrying me, the most wealthy person in this world. This is what she said to them. Kardama Prajapati is the most wealthy person in this world. That is what Devahuti Devi said to Shadaruba and to Swayambhu Manu. One will wonder, how could that be? This person has no house to live. He had nothing in him, and still Devahuti Devi calls him. This is why Devahuti Devi was more intelligent than Akudi or Prasudi, the other two sisters. Why? That question comes. Wealth, what we call as wealth in this world, if you think about it, what is wealth? Wealth is something which is always changing. Today something is wealth, tomorrow something else is wealth. For example, one time, land was considered wealth. If you can take care of land, if you have a lot of land, you are considered wealthy because you hold thousands and thousands of acres. There were landlords with thousands of acres. They owned this land and they were considered wealthy. And at a particular time in the history, you can notice that if you had a lot of land, it has become a curse. Because in many instances you can see, when you had a lot of land, either communists will invade you and take away most of your land away from you. Because they will say, according to everything is the state's property, you are not allowed to have thousands of acres of land. Give it away to others, all who are working. The working people should have it, so distribute everything. We'll take it away from you. So land was not anymore a good solution to have a wealth, as wealth. Not only that, if you look into some of the situations in Europe and America, although you may have land and you may like to do some proper farming there, the state law and the government won't allow you to do what you want to do. They will expect that you will utilize the land in the particular way they tell you to do it. They will ask you to keep the cattle, they will ask you to slaughter the cattle, and they will ask you to do everything according to their understanding of what farming is. They will not allow you to do the farming according to the way you want to do it. You may have good ideas about farming. You may like to grow a nice fruit and vegetables and grains and everything, and maintain cows and look after them and provide them to the human society and develop some mood of goodness in the society. But the government says, no, that's not what we want. We have got our common agricultural policy. That's what they call it. This common agricultural policy, when it comes in, what you have to do is, you have to kill all the animals after every few months, and you have to inject all the chemicals into the cow's body and generate as much milk as want, and then you should store all this milk in the form of a lake somewhere, and then at the end they'll give you some subsidy if you can't sell this milk. This is the common agricultural policy means. So is it any good having land now in this condition? Is good land going to help us? Or what's the use of having land and cattle? So land is a curse now. If you have land, you can't use it properly. So it's a curse as far as land is concerned. Some other time, you will see, gold was considered as a sign of wealth. Many people will keep gold as a safe haven or as a safe way to restore the wealth. So they were using gold. But sometimes you see that the price of the gold, if you want to use the gold sometime, if you keep it for 20, 25 years, you want to dispose the gold and get money, you will see that the price of the gold has not risen in comparison with the inflation, what they call as inflation. And so you will see that you are a pauper after 20 years with the gold what you are keeping in store. So the gold also is not considered a good option. Now comes the third most interesting wealth, what in the modern world, what is known as the stocks and the shares. That story we don't have to explain anymore, because in the last few months, what has been happening and how many hearts are burning because of the money invested in the stocks and shares, you just have to switch on the television and listen to the news, what's being read, how the FTSE index is coming down and going up all the time. And along with that, our happiness is also going up and down with the FTSE index. So this is another sign of wealth. So different things, what I'm trying to say is that different things are considered to be wealth at different times. In Satyugam, at the time of Kardama Prajapati's life, none of these were considered as wealth. Their wealth was considered as austerities and penances. That was the wealth. Tapasa was the wealth of at the time of Kardama Prajapati. 10,000 years he was willing to sacrifice to acquire that strength of austerities and penances. And from that he acquired some wealth, and that is known as tapodhanam. In the Bhagavatam you will see, tapo divyam putragayena satvam shudye dhasmal brahma saukhyam tvanandam. When Rishabhadev was instructing his children, this is the wealth you should acquire, he told his 100 children, tapo divyam tapas from the strength, that is a wealth in the human life, that is a wealth one should acquire, and that is the wealth everyone was trying to acquire in the age of Satyugam. In Kridayugam, that was considered to be wealth, not the land, not the gold, not stocks and shares or bank balance, that has no value there. Tapo divyam putragayena satvam shudhyed asmal brahma saukhyam tvanandam. So Sri Kardama Prajapati, 10,000 years of this austerities and penances, Devahuti Devi understood that he is the wealthiest person in this world. She told Swayambhuva Manu and Shadaruba Devi, the mother and father, that do not worry about me. I am marrying the wealthiest person in this world. And this was her intelligence. This is how intelligent Devahuti Devi was. So anyway, after the Adyo Vaivahigo Vidhi, after the marriage was over, and Swayambhuva Manu and Shadaruba Devi handed her over to Kardama Prajapati, and they left and went back to their own palace. And while leaving, Shadaruba Devi left a lot of jewelry and gold and clothes for her daughter, as a nice mother did for her daughter. But Devahuti Devi had no interest in any of those things. As soon as she married Kardama Prajapati, straight away she changed her clothes into a sage's wife, Rishi Patni, as it says in the Bhagavatam. She took up the dress of a sage's wife. That's what she did. She changed her clothes and with matted hair and wearing the deer skin And exactly like a sage, she started living with Kardama Prajapati. So Kardama Prajapati's marriage to Devahuti Devi began at that time. And there also there is a lot of interesting things happening. And it is then that Kardama Prajapati normally was very, very, very busy in his sadhana or in his archanam or performing this pleasing Krishna. That was his main business. Just because now that I got married, he didn't think, now where is the time for all this archana? Maybe I'll do it for half an hour and the rest of the time I got my family life to go look after. Kardama Prajapati did not go that route. He didn't do that. That is what Bhagavatam says there. That it has taken almost 6 months for the bridegroom to start talking to the bride. That is how it says there. For 6 months, Kardama Prajapati thought, marriage, I got married, that does not mean that I have to change my way of life. He never thought like that. Not only that, he thought in another way. Now that I have got an assistant to help me in my spiritual life, Devahuti Devi had to supply more fruits and flowers to Kardama Prajapati so that he could offer more fruits and flowers to Krishna. That is how their life changed. In other words, in the association of Kardama Prajapati, Devahuti Devi never spoke one word or made one demand from Kardama Prajapati for her own happiness or satisfaction. And this is specifically mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The way Devahuti Devi served Kardama Prajapati, it says in the Bhagavatam, exactly like Sri Parvati Devi served Lord Shiva. That is how it's compared. Sri Parvati Devi service to Lord Shiva, exactly like that, Kardama Prajapati was served by Devahuti Devi. So at that point, once, after many months, 6 months or so, one day, Kardama Prajapati asked Devahuti Devi that you have taken so much pain. Normally in this world, people do different things. The intention is only one thing, that they want to be comfortable at the end. That's a goal. Either we want to be comfortable in our mind, body, and our life in this world. We want to make it comfortable. That is why we do different kind of things. We go to work, we serve so many people, and we try to make our life in this world happier somehow or the other. That is what our put our energy into, to make this life as comfortable as possible. So Kardama Prajapati said to Devahuti Devi that you are one person who did not spend your time in looking after yourself. On the other hand, you followed the same route what I was trying to do. And Kardama Prajapati's extreme happiness, he appreciated Devahuti Devi and said to Devahuti Devi that, was there any special desire or intentions in marrying me? A very, very gentleman's way of putting the question to Devahuti Devi. A very gentleman's way of putting this question to Devahuti Devi. Devahuti Devi, when she heard this question from Kardama Prajapati, she said to him that after marrying a person like you, who has undergone such severe austerities and penances, what will an intelligent woman will expect from such a personality except to have a nice son from him? And this was Devahuti Devi's answer. And that is exactly the same desire I also have. And this is how Devahuti Devi replied to Kardama Prajapati. Kardama Prajapati understood that Devahuti Devi had a desire for householder life. That's how he understood. So in this situation you can see Devahuti Devi's commitment to serve Kardama Prajapati, and Kardama Prajapati's desire into householder life has, although he had no original desire to enter into householder life, but because Krishna has instructed that he should enter into householder life and he is going to have children later, Kardama Prajapati decided to follow that route. That is how it happened. But Vidhi says, in comparison with our own life, we can see where the difference comes in. That both Devahuti Devi and Kardama Prajapati, their performance of marriage was considered strictly in accordance with the Vedic tradition. And when they got married, they were not even willing to make slightest concession from their commitment on the spiritual side. That is how they are. That they were, their commitment to the spiritual side was total. On the material side, let it be whatever that is. That was their attitude. Think about us, how it is in our case. I don't know where we have to discuss that topic. Because when we have a marriage, when we get married, first thing is that the spiritual life side comes to the very minimum. Because then the material anxiety starts building up. First we have to have the house, then you need to have so many other things along with that. And we think that our material life has come as a serious obstacle on the path of spiritual life. But still, cursing all that, we minimize our spiritual activities. But that is not what Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi did. Why is Srimad Bhagavatam telling us all these things? We have to ask this question also. It is only trying to show us that the consciousness of the people in the Krita Yugam and the consciousness of the people in the Kali Yugam, what difference it makes in our attitude, in our own living in this world, in our life in this world. And that's what is coming through. The consciousness of the sages, consciousness of the great personalities in the Krita Yugam was such that life is a spiritual activity. Material activity had no significance there. And as you have seen in the case of Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi, their life was such that they were willing to accept the bare minimum for sustaining their material life. That was their happiness. But on the other side, their spiritual life was blooming. And in Kali Yuga, in our case, we have the highest amount of energy input into the material side of maintaining this material body. And if we can hardly find the time to chant one round of Hare Krishna in a day, we consider that as a great success in life. And this is the difference between the Krita Yugam and the Kali Yugam. So from this, it is only Bhagavatam is trying to show us that the human society's duty in the Krita Yugam, when the Krishna consciousness was on a higher degree, they have acted in one way. And in the Kali Yugam, when we have, which we don't have to discuss so much because we know what happens in our own case, you can see that the big difference that in our own consciousness, in our own thinking. So anyway, after the marriage was over, and after the 6 months of this, when the conversation happened between Devahuti Devi and Kardama Prajapati, Kardama Prajapati understood that Devahuti Devi wants to have a householder life. So at that time, where is the house? Where is the house to have a householder's life? There is no house. The sage has even forgotten even to build what is known as Parnashala. Parnashala means with a thatched roof with bamboo and leaves, at least to cover. That is how it was meant to be. It was meant to be. But even that was not available. Kardama Prajapati did one thing. He sat down and he straight away addressed to Krishna. On your request, I have got into householder life. We have no place to live. Please provide us with a house to live. This Kardama Prajapati's request was heard in Vaikuntha, and Krishna had to arrange to send a palace for Kardama Prajapati to live in this world. It was sent from Vaikuntha direct here. It is mentioned in the third canto. It will all look, when you read all these things, you will be amazed at how these things could happen. But that is what is the history of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting a certain things. And in all these things, there are certain messages also for the human society to learn from Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam, when this palace was sent for Kardama Prajapati, in a very few minutes time, this palace appeared in the sky and came and landed there in the place where they were performing these penances. When the palace arrived, Kardama Prajapati looked at Devahuti Devi and asked her if she was pleased with the palace what has been arrived. It seems, Bhagavatam says there, that Devahuti Devi was not pleased with the palace. You can imagine. Devahuti Devi was not pleased with this palace which was sent from Vaikuntha by Krishna. There is a description of this palace in the Srimad Bhagavatam, about 12 verses. If you read that description, even even the most wealthy people in this world will be amazed by the facilities offered by that particular palace sent from Vaikuntha. And it says there that normally sages, particularly Vedavyas, Valmiki, Maitreya Rishi, all these sages, they have special tendencies when they start describing certain things. For example, if you look at Ramayanam and if you read Valmiki's description of various things, when it comes to forest, Valmiki gets very intoxicated. He cannot refrain. He will take so many chapters to discuss the forest. It is just the nature of Valmiki. Valmiki by nature is a personality like that. When Lord Ramchandra was travelling from Ayodhya all the way to Chitragudam, Kishkinda and Panchavadi and all these places, you will find a graphic description of the forest there. Why? Valmiki gets tremendous pleasure when he starts describing the forest to others. That is Valmiki's nature. Vedavyasa Maharshi is little different. Vedavyasa Maharshi has a different attitude. When you start talking about war, Vedavyasa Maharshi gets very excited. You look into Mahabharata and you look into Srimad Bhagavatam in both these places. Wherever a description of war, a fighting happens, Vedavyasa Maharshi comes into his full bloom and he goes on chapter after chapter. He can discuss the war, what happened, how it happened. Mahabharata is a typical example of that. Throughout Mahabharata, Vedavyasa Maharshi enjoys every single 18 days of war. He wanted to describe it in so much depth and detail. What happened to this one, how the fighting happened, everything. So that is the nature of that particular two different sages. Now, Valmiki likes forest, Vedavyasa Maharshi likes to describe the war. What about Maitreya Rishi? Maitreya Rishi has no interest in either of these two things. Neither war. He is a person who uses very few words to describe these sort of things. He has no interest in that. But when it came to this description of this palace of a palace which was sent from Vaikuntha, 12 long verses Maitreya Rishi used to describe that palace. And more interesting than that, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, even while describing the Krishna's palace in Dwaraka, Sri Shukan did not use so many verses as much as Maitreya Maharshi used to describe this palace of Kardama Prajapati. That is more interesting. After all, Dwaraka's opulence when Krishna was there, you cannot imagine how opulent Dwaraka was. And you cannot even imagine how much the wealth in Dwaraka and the different opulences which were present there at that time. Sri Shukan says that to Parikshit Maharaj. Even that description is not anywhere near to these 12 verses where Kardama Prajapati spoke to where Maitreya Maharshi spoke about the palace that is arrived from Vaikuntha. And even after seeing that palace, Devahuti Devi was not pleased. Now you may wonder why Devahuti Devi was not pleased after seeing this palace. That's an interesting question. Devahuti Devi thought herself that I am the wife of a sage. Look at my clothes and my dress. And here is my husband, Kardama. Kardama in Sanskrit means mud. In other words, practically he has completely ignored his body all these 10,000 years. It was not properly cared for. So virtually it has lost all its strength. And it has become, when you don't take care of something, that is what happens to the body also. That you don't care for it. And most of the sages are like that. They don't spend their time maintaining their body because they live for a higher purpose and with a higher goal. Maintaining material body is the business of the materialist. So they don't act on that platform. So in that process, somehow the body has become like that. So Devahuti Devi also, after associating with Kardama Prajapati for a long time, she has also lost her attraction for the body. And she was living such a simple life. So she thought to herself, this doesn't look appropriate. We both moving into this palace which has come from Vaikuntha. And if I can't even describe my own words to describe that palace what has arrived. There seems to be a mismatch in our nature and this palace. In other words, we are saintly personalities, sages we are. We should not be living in these palaces. Rather, we should be living in some thatched hut or thatched roof. So she said to Kardama Prajapati, I don't think we should move into this palace. This is what she said to him. Kardama Prajapati also agreed that she also said that this is not to my liking, this palace, what has come from there. So he thought for a moment, he said, why shouldn't I ask Krishna to send me some thatched hut if that is available in Vaikuntha? This was the next thought that has come to his head, that we are all sages, we don't need all these type of things. All we need, some thatched place where, with the leaves and the bamboos and everything, a simple hut, that will do more than anything for us. So this thought came to his mind. But then he thought, maybe this was sent by Krishna, how can I refuse it and ask for something else? After all, Krishna has asked me to get married. Krishna has asked me, told me that he is going to come down as my son later. So if that is the case, it may not be appropriate to say that to Krishna. Then he thought, maybe I should put a board outside, Kardama Ashram or something like that, on front of the palace. That thought came to his mind. That's how today we find, isn't it? You go to Haridwar, Rishikesh, and so many places, you will find they build multi-storied buildings with air conditioners and big car parking facilities, television, everything. And they will go outside, they will put a board there as such an ashram. They call it an ashram. And these two things don't match together. Ashram has its own description in the Shastra, what an ashram is meant to be. And here you are looking at this massive building with all the modern facilities and thinking of what an ashram have I ended up with at the end. That's the thought comes to you. So this is not much different. This has happened in Kardama Prajapati's time. But in Kali Yuga, we got used to all these modern facilities so much that our concept of ashram is like this, with all the air conditioners and the Rolls Royce cars and everything, whatever the modern facilities are offered, it's all ashram. Still, it is considered to be an ashram. So anyway, Kardama Prajapati at that time thought for a moment and said to Devahuti Devi, the right thing to do is not to ask Krishna for anything else, but Krishna has told me that he wants us to live in this householder life. Best thing is that you should go and bathe in that Bindusaras. Bindusaras is the tears that has come from Krishna's eyes, and you should go and bathe in that lake. So accordingly, Devahuti Devi went and bathed in that lake. When she has bathed in that lake, when she came out, what happened? It says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, she looked exactly like Sri Parvati, Lord Shiva's wife. That is how Sri Parvati is known for her beauty. And here comes Devahuti Devi, has lost all her bodily features, changed so much when she came after bathing there. And she says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that she looked exactly like Sri Parvati. And what happened in addition, that Shatani Dasha Kanyagaha, that when she came out, there were thousands of maids to serve her, in that her new bodily luster was so high that she looked so beautiful like Sri Parvati. That is how Srimad Bhagavatam says. But although when Devahuti Devi came out after bathing in this lake, and she looked very attractive and beautiful, she still thought that this Kardama Prajapati still doesn't change very much. He still looks the same old Kardama Prajapati, wearing this deer skin, and all the bones are protruding out because of the penances what he was performing, and his long hair, matted hair, and long beard, everything. He felt that he may not have what is going to happen now. The Kardama Prajapati also bathed in that, and after that, what did she see? She saw him exactly like a young personality, like you see in the Srimad Bhagavatam at so many instructor times, the description given, young personality who was full of vitality and vigor. And that is what Devahuti Devi saw as Kardama Prajapati at that moment. Kardama Prajapati held Devahuti's hand and they entered into the palace. As soon as they entered into the palace, it is then that they realized the potency of that palace. The palace immediately lifted from the earth and started moving in the sky. And the travel of these palaces in the higher planetary systems is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It traveled through Nandanam, Chaitraratham, Vaishravanam. These are the higher planetary systems where the demigods live, and their planet and the heavenly planets, where this particular seven-story building of which has come from Vaikuntha, which is the palace of Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi, started traveling through all these great gardens of the demigods. The interesting thing to note here is that although they lived in this material world, and generally the only this planet is in the gross form. All others are subtle forms, subtle body. And when we live in this gross planet, we have no vision of these subtle planets according to Vedic knowledge. But Kardama Prajavati and Devahuti Devi were given the special facility that even while living in this material world, even in this material body and in the palace, they were still able to have a good look at all these great, great higher planetary systems. Even they went into the Janalokam, Maharlokam, and they were able to see the three planets which are on the higher than the high, the topmost planetary systems, namely Brahmalokam or Satyalokam, Brahmalokam or Satyalokam, and Tapalokam and Janalokam. So, all these three planetary systems they were able to see. And for a long period of time, this particular palace of Devahuti Devi and Kardama Prajapati travelled through all the different planetary systems in this universe. They were able to see. They were so much in wonder when they were able to see the different planetary systems where the demigods and their lifestyle in Dhruva's planet. So many things mentioned in the Bhagavatam about their vision at different planets and their lifestyle there. And they never knew how much time has passed. It was at that time Devahuti Devi came to the realization. Suppose if I had married an ordinary prince, can this ever would have happened in my life? It was only that is why her judgment and correct understanding that this Kardama Prajapati was the wealthiest person who has offered her this greatest material happiness in this world. So it was then that all this palace, after a long period of time, the palace arrived back into the same ashram where they started the journey from. So when this point, by now the nine girls were born for Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi. So when the children were born, Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi, they were Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi, they had different thoughts in their mind. Kardama Prajapati wanted to leave home, because originally that was the agreement that I will leave the householder life and take to sannyasa ashram. That was agreed with Krishna before he entered into householder life. When it was discussed, Krishna requested Kardama Prajapati that he should enter into householder life. But after that, when the children are born, he can leave home. That was permission given to him. So these thoughts came to him. Now, why is that? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, all this description is given there of this marriage and this palace and all these things. This question automatically comes. The reason for that is that generally, a lot of people have this false conception that if you serve Krishna, one day Krishna will make you poor and take away all your wealth and make you a pauper. This thought is, so therefore, many devotees worship Lord Shiva because of this. And they say that Lord Shiva gives you everything what you want, never takes away anything from you. And there are many demigods like that who will offer you so much. They will tell you, you can offer you one boon, you can ask whatever you want and we'll offer you that. But Krishna's case is different. People have this false conception that if you serve Krishna, you will eventually end up with, you will become pauper. To make understand people that you will never become short of anything in life, even in this world, just to show that this story has brought in Kardama Prajapati's married life with Devahuti Devi, and her happiness in the married life was specifically explained in the third canto for this reason, that you will never be a loser as soon as you are serving Krishna, even in this world. This is what that message coming from. So anyway, that marriage happened, and then after the marriage, nine girls were born, and then the question came, whom should I marry these girls to? So when Kardama Prajapati disclosed his mind to Devahuti Devi that he wants to leave home and take sannyasa ashram, it was then that Devahuti Devi mentioned to Kardama Prajapati that I am not against you taking sannyas. I am not against you taking sannyas. But I have got these 9 daughters. They have to be married. How will I find the husband, suitable husbands for them? Secondly, even if I get them married, I will be left alone. Who is going to look after me at my old age? These questions came up from Devahuti Devi automatically. So it was then that Kardama Prajapati remembered that Krishna has promised that I will come as your son, as the last child. That thought came to him straight away. Then he decided to give up taking the sannyas and decided to stay home. From then on, both Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi together, they performed a devotional service together. Not thinking that praying for Krishna to come as their son, but knowing that Krishna is going to appear as our son, as the next child. There is a big difference in that. When they were praying to Krishna to appear as your own son, when you do not know what is going to happen. But here, already you are told that Krishna is going to come as your child, as the next child. And then there is a devotional service which Kardama Prajapati and Devahuti Devi has performed together. And it was after that, Jetne Agni Rivadaruni from Devahuti Devi, then from Devahuti Devi, Kapila Vasudeva appeared. Exactly like in the sacrifices, when Arani is ground each other and the fire comes out of that. Similarly, from Devahuti Devi, there was womb, Kapila Vasudeva appeared. And that is where it starts. It stops there. And we have to go on now. There is a little bit more to talk about. Kardama Prajapati is married to Devahuti Devi. Kardama Prajapati is taking sannyasam and leaving home. And after that, Devahuti Devi's discussions with Kapila Vasudeva. And eventually, from then starts the Kapila Vasudeva's instructions to Devahuti Devi, known in the Srimad Bhagavatam as Kapila. So, which we will do next week, because we haven't got much time. So, I won't read anything today, we'll read it next week. But if there's any questions or comments on this, what I have told.
When Devi is worrying about the child, the prophecy will perform pious activities.
Yes.
Then Narayanesh told Narayan Maharaj to pious activities, Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
Is Srimad Bhagavatam just pious activity?
No, Srimad Bhagavatam is trying to show that. Yeah, I have to explain a little more. Srimad Bhagavatam has relieved them from that distress. That is what it is trying to say. Why distress? That is another question. If you read Srimad Bhagavatam carefully, who reads Srimad Bhagavatam? Those who are in distress, they read Srimad Bhagavatam. Why? In the beginning it says there, Dharma Projida Gaida Mutra Varano Nirmal Saranam Sadam Vedyam Vastavamatra Vastu Shivadam Tabatrayon Mulanam. So removing distress is what one receives from Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you look into the end of Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there also the last words in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhave bhave yadha bhakti padayo stava jayade tada kurushva devesha nadhastvam no yada prabho nama sangirtanam yasya sarva bhava pranashanam pranamo dukkha shamanam tam namami harim param. So dukkha shamanam, or leaving one from his own distress, is the goal of Srimad Bhagavatam, is the purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Vedavyasa Maharshi is inviting people to relieve this distress. Now, who is in distress? That question comes. Who is not in distress? It is better to ask that question. If somebody says in this world, is not in distress, is not considered to be very, very intelligent from the Vedic point of view. That's why we were saying there that this distress has to be recognized first, that there is distress in this world. Most of the people are not even come to that understanding that there is distress in this world. They are so much absorbed in their body and sensual happiness that they cannot even accept that there is distress following them all the time, which Krishna is also trying to make us aware through Bhagavad Gita. That Krishna says, Janman mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshanu darshanam, that one should see these things as distress. And those who have not come to this understanding of distress, for them Bhagavatam is not an attraction. But those who consider that life is distress in this world, in every stage, it is for them to relieve that distress, Srimad Bhagavatam can do that. And that is why in the beginning as well as in the end, Tavatrayon Mulanam Pranamo Dukkha Shamanam. That living distress is the beginning. So these, Jnanam and Vairagyam, they were in distress. And that is why they had got into that situation. So their distress was taken out when they heard Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is how it is mentioned. That when the Kumaras recited Srimad Bhagavatam, immediately when it came to the ears, as soon as that happens, that they immediately changed the consciousness. Jnanam and Vairagyam woke up because they realized that there are people who are willing to accept us. And along with that, Bhakti Devi came to the scene dancing, along with holding these two young boys in her hands. This is how it's mentioned coming into that scene. So Srimad Bhagavatam has that potency in it. And this incident is only trying to tell us that through Srimad Bhagavatam, what even Bhagavad Gita could not, Gita Padeer Mohur Moho, Vedavyasa Maharshi's Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's Bhagavad Gita was recited, that did not bring them back into that condition, which Srimad Bhagavatam did. So that is the reason why it's called like that.
Is Brahma Sutra and Brahma Samhita same?
Brahma Sutram?
Yes.
Brahma Sutram and Vedanta Sutram is same. Brahma Samhita is not the same. Brahma Samhita is Lord Brahma's prayers to the Supreme Lord. Brahma Sutram, or other words also known as Vedanta Sutram, belongs to what is known as Prasthanatrayam. There are three things in the Vedic tradition. That is, one is Bhagavad Gita, other one is Vedanta Sutram, and then the major Upanishads. There's 108 major Upanishads. So all the acharyas generally, normally comment about these three things. And that is how they present their philosophical viewpoint in the Vedic system. So out of these three, Vedanta Sutram is considered to be the topmost literature. Because to understand and study Vedanta Sutra, one has to have a very good mastery of the Sanskrit language. And also to understand that, it is mentioned, put it in the form of sutra. Sutra means, in English they call it as aphorisms. In other words, to understand that, it is condensed, the truth is condensed in very minute way, that unless it is explained by great personalities, it's difficult to understand. So on this Vedanta Sutram, there are commentaries by all the great acharyas, Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and others also. So generally, one who is following the path of knowledge, they will study Vedanta Sutra in detail, in depth. So Srimad Bhagavatam, according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and many other authorities, is considered to be a commentary of Vedanta Sutram, of this Brahma Sutram. It's a commentary of that. And it says at the end, Bhashyam Brahma Sutranam, that it is a Bhashyam or commentary of Vedanta Sutram is this Srimad Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam has a very unique position like that.
You were saying that there's no process of devotional service.
Right.
And then you were actually saying different devotees have different tastes.
That's correct, yes.
I would say that the people here in this room listening to you have got a taste of listening.
Yes, that's why they're
so
here.
Because most of the people here relish what you're actually saying.
Srimad,
that's why they come here again.
Yes.
Don't you need to balance that with everything else, you know, in the sense of chanting, kirtan?
Yeah. You see, the purpose of all the processes is to keep Krishna in the heart. Now, for different people, different things makes that happen. Out of all these nine processes, hearing is the most powerful process. Why? Because everybody likes to hear stories. That's the human nature, isn't it? No matter, for example, music, for example, okay? Why people get attracted to kirtanam? Because of the music, isn't it? But the problem is, with kirtanam is, if your mind is simply absorbed in music, that's not going to help. For example, this Hare Krishna Mahamantra, there is about 250 ragas you can sing that Mahamantra. But if you are interested in the 250 ragas, and if you go after the ragas, it's not going to bring the desired result. Why? Because your mind is absorbed in the music side of it. The purpose of singing kirtanam is to have Krishna in your heart, that the prayer has to be so much absorbing your mind in Krishna, personally, absorbing in Krishna. And that story can do, or Bhagavatam can do, much more effectively than Kirtanam. It has much more strength in doing that. Why? Because Krishna came to this world and performed all these pastimes only for people to relish it. If they don't relish it, what is the use of Bhagavatam? You can just throw it away as well, and everybody can sit and sing all the different ragas all the time. But that's not the point. Kirtanam is eventually intended to absorb the mind in Krishna. How you absorb mind in Krishna is immaterial. Somehow or the other, that's what Bhagavatam says. Yena kena upayena. By any means, doesn't matter. Rupa Goswami also says the same thing. That mana Krishna niveshet. Mind should get absorbed in Krishna. And for that, all these different processes exist. Now, if somehow or the other, if one of these processes, if you can perfect it, or if you can advance on that nicely, automatically your mind will turn away from the rest. You will not be able to help it. It is a natural process that happens. That if you hear Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, after hearing for about 4 or 5 years, it will be difficult to get you out of Srimad Bhagavatam, even if you want to. As soon as you hear there is somebody speaking on Srimad Bhagavatam, you will be there in the front, sitting there to listen to it. Why? That is the potency of Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam by nature, because everyone who has studied Srimad Bhagavatam, they get realizations from that. And everybody gets different realizations also. You can never say what kind of realization one person will get from the other. And you want to hear those realizations. And they are all related to Krishna in some form or the other. And that is what makes it more interesting. And what happens then? Once you hear all these things, then the mind, as and when you find a few minutes free, you start thinking about all that. Automatically, without your own knowledge, it will happen. I have seen this happening to people. Even at the age of 80 and 85, all the 75 years they have heard in their life Srimad Bhagavatam, it's going through the mind again and again. And it starts thinking, oh, this is what that person told us about this particular pastime of Krishna. Because all these Krishna's pastimes in the Bhagavatam has so much in it. And otherwise these commentaries wouldn't have come out from Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is why, if you keep on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam again and again and again, a day will come. You will not be able to separate yourself from, even you will leave your job or even other responsibility at home and start inquiring where is somebody talking about Srimad Bhagavatam. That kind of consciousness will come. And once that happens, there is no chance of forgetting Krishna at the time of death. You cannot do it, even if you want to do it. Because by now, you know how it is mentioned in the Bhagavatam, if Sri Shukan explains that. Sri Shukan says there in one verse to Parikshit Maharaj in the 10th canto, Yatha Hari Nishevaya, the way he explained it is like this. In the Vrindavanam, after the summer season, the rains come. We are talking about 5,000 years, not today. We have to forget that today's condition. Today is totally different. But 5,000 years ago, when the nature was so nice, and when Krishna was present there at that time, the whole seasons and all the whole weather conditions were so pleasant, that after the summer season, when the rain started, the whole nature was lushy with green. All the vegetables and and the lavish greenery came out, right? So, Sri Shukan says to Parikshit Maharaj, exactly this is how it will happen to a devotee. Why? A devotee who is serving Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam, Yatha Hari Nishevaya, this is the word he has used. One who is serving Krishna, he says, after some time, you can look at that person and tell you that this person is serving Krishna seriously. You can say that without even talking to him. And not only that, some commentators are saying about this, that if you want to become beautiful in this life, even if you have got a very ugly body, in a very bad shape, everything, Sri Shukan says in the Bhagavatam, that I will give you a very secret formula, he says. What's that formula? He says, serve Krishna, you will become beautiful in your life. Even your body will become beautiful. That's what Sri Shukan says to Parikshit. Yatha Hari Nishevaya. And Vrindavanam changed, Sri Shukan says there, exactly like a devotee who is serious in his life serving Krishna. That is how he has compared both. You know. So, what the point is, that serving Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam is such a thing, that when one does it, those who have done it in their life in the past, they have all realized it, that it has something what Krishna has left behind, a great legacy of this Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam can change a person's life in this world to such an extent that other material influences will never again come in to the mind and start disturbing him. In other words, the mind is full of Krishna consciousness from then on. But one has to get to that stage. That takes a little while. But one has to continuously listen to Bhagavatam. But the potency is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the process.
And you're saying it's more effective in Bhagavad Gita, so it's
well,
not a choice.
No, no, it's not like that. I know, it doesn't mean that we are not trying to make Krishna's words minimize anything. See, Supreme Personality, Krishna is left behind in this world before he departed, Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Although Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto is Krishna's life in this world. And the 11th canto is the knowledge, what Krishna has left behind in this world. So, both this 11th canto and Bhagavad Gita is necessary for those who want to advance in the spiritual path. It helps them very much. But to start with, understand who is Krishna, Bhagavad Gita is the process to begin with. We should study Bhagavad Gita seriously. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has explained everything, jnanam, karmam, bhakti, and he has also touched upon the other yoga systems like Raja Yoga and Hatha Yoga in a very limited way. But if you read whole of Bhagavad Gita, ultimately you will realize Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That realization will come strongly by using your own intelligence and analyzing the depth of knowledge Krishna has revealed through Bhagavad Gita. Once you have understood that, then you want to know about Krishna more. And that is how you move into Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is where Bhagavatam can help you. It means that Bhagavad Gita is anyway inferior to Bhagavatam or anything. It doesn't mean at all. All it means is that these two great literature serves two different purposes. Once you accepted Krishna as the Supreme Lord and wants to understand him more, you enter into Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the importance.
Just
you were saying in your class about how the train from Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
And Hada Omuni just prayed to Krishna.
Yeah.
So would that apply in the life of a devotee at all times, or would it?
Well, if that's what he wants, I know. What he's saying is that, Bhagavatam is saying is that you should not think that as soon as you become a devotee of Krishna, you are not going to have anything in this world. If you want, that is what you want from Krishna, you can ask, Krishna can provide that. I mean, you don't have to think that you should go into somebody else asking for it. There is no need for that. That's what it is saying. But that doesn't mean that we have to follow and I'm waiting for my palace now when it's going to come from the Vaikuntha. No, that's not what it is meant. It is only trying to show us that Kardama Prajapati was so aware in his mind that I don't have to go and do anything else in this world except serving the Supreme Lord. And these are insignificant things as far as Krishna is concerned, to provide you a palace to live. That's what it means. And as I said before, that if you read that description of the palace in the Bhagavatam, you will be so much amazed that even for the standards of modern life, you cannot imagine that palace is anywhere closer to that. Even the most wealthy people in this world cannot imagine. Because when you consider how much money is involved in this perfume industry in this world, billions and billions of pounds they use to keep the body smelling nice. Although inside is all, you know what it smells inside. So, but still, that is this human society is engaged in. But here, it says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that if you want to become beautiful, even if you have such desires in your heart still pending, serve Krishna. That is the message. Krishna will give you that beauty if that's what you want in this world. So all these things are just to show that by serving Krishna, you will never be a loser anytime. That's the message.
Prabhupada mentions, if you strictly follow first sravanam, then Ketram, then Vishnu Sravanam. If you follow three things, other
yes,
things automatically.
There's
follow.
Also another school of thought who says there that when Prahlad Maharaj spoke to Hiranyakashipu, what you have learned at school, Prahlad Maharaj recited these words to Hiranyakashipu: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Achanam, Mandanam, Dasim, Sakhyam, Atma, Nivedanam. The nine processes. This is what I learned at the school. That was enough to make him furious, the father. Hiranyakashipu got upset about it. So at that time, at that time, he said to Hiranyakashipu that Almani Vedanam is the last one. Yeah, Almani Vedanam means surrendering everything to Krishna, not caring for anything else, no consideration for family, society, or anything. Giving everything to Krishna, Almani Vedanam. So, that process was explained there to Hiranyakashipu. So, next time when Hiranyakashipu called him, he told him, before you get to that stage, there is something else you have to do. That is Shravanam. First you have to hear, he said. And that is how he spoke to a little bit of philosophy to Hiranyakashipu at that stage. He spoke to him. You will see in the Bhagavatam all those things are there. So what happens is, in these 9 processes, if one gets perfect with one, then eventually it ends up that person wants to relish that all the time. That is the rasam of Bhagavatam. The mellow in the Bhagavatam is this, that particular process what one has adopted in his life, he wants to go in that as much as he could till he feels that total satisfaction. And the point is, normally you never get totally satisfied because you will continue exploring further and further. That is the nature of our mind and our consciousness. That's the way it is. It cannot change it. So the 9 processes are given there. In the early days, we will have to do all the 9. That is the difficult thing, because we don't know which one suits us or which is our nature. So till you come to that point when you can make that decision, which one is going to help me in my spiritual life, we have to continue doing all the 9, because you may never know which one is going to be of taste to you. For example, some devotees, they will chant Hare Krishna, and after chanting many years, they enjoy chanting to such an extent that they do not want to do anything else. This will come. This is also nature. Human nature is like that. Because it's not possible to do physical service throughout the life. A day will come when you are not physically able to do any service. That can also happen in our life. And we will also find that other things are not giving us that spiritual motivation as much as chanting is concerned. So chanting is another process in this 9. One of them it is chanting, which is kirtanam, again glorifying Krishna, right? So that can happen also. But till we know which one is our process, we have to do all the 9 as much as we could and find out what is ultimately our process, what is to our taste. And so depending on our mentality and our outlook in life and association we get and our realizations and perhaps even in our past life, whatever ideas were or our nature was, all this has influence on these decisions.
You know, last week you were talking about the prayer that this Brahmana prayed to. He says he hadn't practiced praying to Krishna, and then he gave the examples of some sages that the one that was fighting with the demigods, he had a moment's time, and then he took the story of the prostitute, and then. You talked about Dhruv Maharaj. You started with Dhruv Maharaj. And then he's saying, Krishna, I haven't got time.
Yeah.
Please take me as I am. It was wonderful. But when I was actually reading one of the cantos that described the discussion of the prostitute Pingala, it was never, in Prabhupada's version of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he didn't mention how she actually died. You know, it talked about the prayers, etc., what she actually prayed. But it didn't say that she...
Where did you read Pingala's story in the Bhagavatam?
I can't remember it, but I did read it.
Yeah, you might have read Pingala's name is mentioned in few places in the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
But if you have read Pingala's story in the 11th canto, there this is mentioned. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Pingala's story in detail comes in.
Yeah.
If you read there it is mentioned that Pingala has left her body in this way. It's mentioned.
Okay. I thought I read it in the 11th canto, but that
it
was
it couldn't be in the 11th
memory.
Canto because Prabhupada did not comment on 11th canto. You see, 11th canto was not commented by Prabhupada. 11th canto was commented by later on by 2 devotees, Hridayananda and Gopi Parayana Khana. They together made the commentary for that. I don't know whether you have seen that book or...
No, I've got that book. Didn't mention her passing away.
It has to be there because it's there in the Bhagavatam. I can read out the verses for you if you want.
Okay, I'll look at it again.
Yeah, Pingala, how she gave up the body. Because this story of Pingala is quoted by Atreya Rishi among the 24 spiritual masters as one. Prithvi, Vayu, Agasham, Apam, Agni, Chandraman, Revi, Kapodam, Ajagaram, Sindhu, Padangam, Madhugat Gaja, Madhuha, Harino, Meena, Pingala. Pingala story comes. And what I have learned from Pingala, he says there, and this is what I have learned. And how did she get that situation? Because she got the association of this great devotee. That's what changed her mind in that night. All these things are there. This is 24 spiritual masters is a big topic. It's a topic of its own for discussion for months. Together they discuss this topic. And all great commentators, they talk about it in a big scale. And Pingala is one of the important topics there. Gopis quote about Pingala in their prayers in Vrindavanam. They mention about Pingala also there. So if you look at the 11th canto again, have a read through that.
I'll have a look, then
you can talk about it later. Yeah. Okay, we'll stop there.